This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
But that's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severn, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
JR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually rewrite a whole show.
This is the third time you said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying that
your day is... I'm curious how I have more free time than you.
I'm gonna report.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I'm not used to this long, grueling podcast game.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Are you guys just joking around for the next hour?
Fun. Did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s?
I was being...
And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
What the fuck is a shock wall?
Is that the Shockmaster's wall? He's going to fall through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
opener.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Dracula and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rack's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTB Man Cave as October trudges along. And God, it's almost already November. These months just fly by here. Place to Be Podcast. Speaking of a man whose life has flown by deep into his 40s now, that is, of course, my one and only PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
October, JR, does seem to be going at a... very brisk pace.
October is, it's always an expensive month. I feel like it's a tax month. I usually have like 17 weddings in October. For once, I don't have any weddings. It just always seems like something comes up and costs me money in October.
Two nights at Picasso's.
That's right. Well, not this. I will not be there Sunday. I have some business for work to attend to. So not to be at Picasso's. But I think Roger may, he's working on Andy to try and get him to go anyway. So
we'll see. Nice. Cool. Maybe they could join the live block. Anyway, it's a pleasure, JR, as always. Welcome, PTB Nation, to episode 263 of the Place to Be Podcast. And, of course, we're delving into the silver box. We'll get to that in a moment. JR, you had a fine weekend, I imagine, sir?
Yeah. It started a little bit shaky with the Red Sox advancing to the World Series. But it got much better. Mysterious calls aside, it was a much better finish to Sunday when the Jets defeated the Patriots, but I have a feeling we'll get into that a little bit on Wednesday.
Yes. Yeah.
I look forward to that. We haven't really gotten to talk football in a while, so we'll have to take some time Wednesday to get into it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, big wins for both of us on Sunday. So. But we have a special episode tonight. But before we do that, JR, a word?
A word. We like to support our nation members as much as possible. And one of our best fans and great men that we're friends of here is Ben Morse.
Yes.
Of course, a longtime listener of the podcast, a tremendous tweeter, and of course, a fantastic columnist at placetobenation.com. And Ben just wanted to pass along that his wife is collecting money for a charity walk. She's a labor and delivery nurse at Hackensack UMC, Passaic Valley, and is organizing walking in the March of Dimes to benefit sick and premature babies. The walk is not till April, but we're trying to spread the word early. raise as much as possible. So, you know, you guys were awesome supporting me. And if you have any extra dimes or nickels or dollars to help lend Ben as we try and get support some his wife a little bit. And that March 9th walk for babies is actually a very good walk. I've done it before in the past, and a good cause, of course, for premature babies. So if you want to contact Ben, just go ahead and he'll give you the information on where you can donate. I think it'll also be up on the Facebook page too. So I just wanted to get that out there before I forgot, and give some support to Ben. So if you can help him out, help him out. And as always, we always appreciate your generosity.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes, always a good cause. Always a good cause. All right. A guy who is also a good cause. He is a good cause.
Hey, what is going on here?
Just leave a 20 on the table, Chunky. Tonight, speaking of Chunky, that's what gumbo is, Chunky. Because tonight we're going to go to uncharted waters for the World Wrestling Federation to display some big red dominance.
For 30 men, no other night in their life is as important as tonight. While 29 will fall, one will be given the chance of a lifetime. The chance to become World Wrestling Federation champion. Most have never been there, gazing from afar at the goal. Never closer to them than the sun, and never as reachable as tonight. Who have been to the top, experiencing the WWE most coveted prize, but to have been to Eden and tasted its fruit may be worse than never having been there at all. Tonight, these men are ravenous wolves on the hunt, championship junkies fixated on victory. Tonight, 30 men are pitted against each other with one singular purpose, one common goal. If WrestleMania is the showcase of the immortal, then tonight, the Royal Rumble is the first step to ultimate glory.
Royal Rumble time, Scott. Always exciting. And I guess we should mention, you know, we're not alone tonight. Of course, Rumble has 30 men, but here on the podcast, we have three men. Two and a half men, I guess. Me, you, the half man. And then our special...
That was so predictable.
Our special guest. Well, I couldn't insult our guest, of course. One of our... Another great fan, another longtime listener, and you may have heard him in the trivia contest, and as part of that trivia contest, we fucked him on an answer, and I offered to extend the olive branch by letting him pick any Vintage Vault to come join us on, and he chose this show.
He broke the fourth wall on this one, so...
Well, it's the truth, right? I mean, he had a question. We didn't... I forget the details, but either way, we wronged him. And now we try to correct that wrong by having him here tonight, the one and only the great Mr. Aaron George. Aaron, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How you doing?
We're doing very well, thank you.
And I will never forget those details, just so you guys know, all right? It's like burned in my brain.
It's scratched in your arm with a knife, card. You have Scott's name tattooed on your fingers. All right. So, yeah. Of course, we are here at the Royal Rumble 2001. Scott, why don't you set the story up for us?
Yes, 2001, Royal Rumble. Another great open, by the way.
Yep.
Another great open.
It's funny. I heard it like two nights ago and it got me pumped. And I just heard it again and I'm feeling like shivers. Oh. Like these things were so sensational at the time, you know?
Yes.
Aaron's recording this with his cane mask on. He is ready to go.
Yeah. Yes. Full cane costume. Get the full image, okay?
Yes. January 21st, 2001. Live from the New Orleans Arena in Nawlins, Louisiana. For the first time, JR, we're in the bayou, the French Quarter.
First time, huh? Kind of crazy.
Yeah. All those Super Bowls that they've hosted.
All those burgers, all those fries.
Football games, yep. All those Sugar Bowls, Final Fours. First time ever pay-per-view was in New Orleans.
You surprised they didn't try to run the Superdome?
A little. I mean, hell, in a darker time, they did the Alamo Dome. Now, yeah. Mind you, the Alamo Dome's about... 40 or 50,000 less seats, but
still, I mean, if there's any time in history, you know, maybe they don't want to take away from the Astrodome for Mania, I guess.
Probably not. Yeah, I mean, if Mania was in a smaller place, remember in '97, 13 was in, you know, was at Rosemont, which isn't exactly a, you know, stellar palace or anything. Yeah, that, you're probably right. Two domes in, you know, 3 months might have been a little much.
And we'd never hear the end of it if they had. If they had sold out both those domes, like, we'd be, they'd be talking about it every show for here to eternity.
Like, like the number of times that Chris Jericho won both.
Yeah. And then beating the Pope at WrestleMania 3.
Yeah. All right. Your attendance. Well, JR, we need a little history because we certainly have never been here before. The history.
Yes. The arena. New Orleans Arena opened October 29, 1999.
Oh, so it's relatively new.
Yeah,
wow.
Pretty fresh at this time. Was built and owned by the state of Louisiana. Cost a mere $114 million. Project manager, CS Associates. Capacity, concerts, 19,000. Basketball, 18,500. Arena football, 16,500. So, well, what would you say the attendance was on this one, Scott?
The attendance is 16,056.
Okay, so a little bit short, but pretty big set on this one. So, yep. The tenants, your New Orleans. No?
Gamblers? No. The Houston Gamblers.
The Pelicans of the NBA, Pelican. 2002 to the present.
Oh, here we go.
I don't know if you're aware of that. That's what they're now called. The New Orleans Brass of the ECHL played there for 3 years. The New Orleans Voodoo of the AFL currently play there. And the NBA All-Star Game has been there twice.
Oh, did you know that the Hornets are leaving to go to Charlotte?
Yes, you know? I just found that out today. Actually, there is a great article on Charlotte. I think it's charlotteobserver.com. Hang on, let me get the actual link. They did an oral history of the first year of the Hornets.
Oh,
1986.
Nice.
charlotteobserver.com/charlotte-magazine/november-2013/the-place-went-nuts-oral-history.
How about the Facebook page?
We can post it there too. I got through halfway through right now. So it talks about how they won the franchise when all the other cities were making fun of them. They didn't think Charlotte would ever win the bid, and they talk about their first year. I'm up to the first victory right now. So get some cameos from my boy Muggsy Bogues, Kelly Trapuka. So a lot of fun in there.
That team, the Charlotte Hornets, was because we don't. Where I live in Montreal, we don't have any basketball up here. And that team was like the go-to team for everyone in the 90s.
Yes, the colors, man.
Yeah, and here it was just crazy. Like it was like the Larry Johnson, Alonzo Mourning years too. So they're doing all right, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean, same here. I mean, in Rhode Island, obviously default to the Celtics, but I jumped in. I think anyone that was growing up between, you know, if you were like a tween between like 88 and like 94, I think you were destined to be a Hornets fan at some point.
Yeah.
Mm. Just because, like you said, some of the characters they had. And of course, Larry Johnson was Grandmama on Family Matters. He made his appearance. That was a big deal at the time. And him and Zoe were quite the team with Muggsy, Del Curry. I digress.
Yes.
This is what the Brad and Chad show is for, to talk about this nonsense, inane nonsense.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
We'll have to do it in there.
Yes. The buy rate is pretty damn good, 1.35. That's a pretty awesome buy rate for non-mania show. And your announcers, of course, the voices of the Attitude Era, good old JR Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler.
And I guess we'll tease this now, and Scott, we can confirm it when we get there, but I believe, and I think many others do as well, and I want your take on this, Aaron, that this show kicks off the greatest 3 pay-per-view run in wrestling history. Now, there's some other ones in the mix, but I think it's hard to top these 3. Aaron, do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the next 3 coming up, where can you go? You can maybe do the Backlash, Judgment Day, 2000, I guess, era in there.
Well, no, there's no third one.
That's right. You don't have the King of the Ring. That's right. Yeah, no, for sure.
God, no.
I can't even think off the top of my head what would be better.
There's a close grouping. I think it's in 94 WCW. It was like, I know Spring Stampede and Slamboree were involved. I can't remember if it was the back end with Bash at the Beach. There were 3 in that stretch that were pretty good. And 89 NWA had 3 in a row that were pretty good too. I'm struggling to remember off the top of my head, but I know there's been a stretch. And I think in the modern era, there's a few as well that you could maybe consider. But it's hard to top these 3, Scott, do you think?
Oh, I agree. And you're probably thinking of Chi-Town Rumble, probably Super Brawl, and the Bash.
Yeah, I think
probably
so.
Those 3 are pretty damn good.
No, there's no Super Brawl yet in 89.
No? What's the one in... Oh, not Super Brawl, Wrestle War. The third of the Flair Steamboat match.
Super Brawl Saturday?
Billy, what's his name? I don't know! those 3 are pretty close, but these 3 we're about to do over the next few weeks really are just the absolute wheelhouse of this run in the Attitude Era. These are a lot of... I've been looking forward to this stretch for a while. It's going to be a fun run.
And then we have something really cool planned for you guys. We're not going to spoil it yet, but after we do Mania, we have something really cool to kind of recap this whole spring of 01 in the world of wrestling. We got some good guests lined up, and I will do a little roundtable about it. So we'll talk about that more in the next couple of weeks, but that should be fun.
Yeah. We do have a big Sunday Night Heat match, JR, because it was supposed to have something to do with the pay-per-view. Of course, it eventually wouldn't. But tell us the one big match that happened on Heat.
Lowdown.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, it was D'Lo Brown and Chaz, managed by Tiger Ali Singh, defeated Kai and Tai to win an entry into the Royal Rumble. And the deal was one of the men would get to enter the Rumble. So they would later on have a little segment that we'll talk about.
Yes.
Kai and Tai, Scott, and Aaron had their little new gimmick in place by this show.
Yes.
Of course, this is where they started having the overdubbed English speaking. So they would basically, like any kind of kung fu movie, they would speak in their native tongue, and then you'd have the overdubbed English behind it. And the whole hook was Funaki would always say, "Indeed," yes, after a taco would ramble. So I thought this was cool. It brought them back to a little bit of relevance. And one of those things that kind of just took off on Heat and made its way to the big show. But it kind of bumped Kai and Tai back up here towards the end of the run.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And yeah, it's fun because, you know, Funaki would move his mouth for like 20 seconds and then it would only one word would come out. It was pretty good.
Yeah, like he would talk forever. This is what brought my casual friends back to it, which is strange.
Just Kai and Tai?
Like, look at these guys. They're talking and it's hilarious. Like, all right, guys. Funny. Yeah.
And Lowdown, JR would and Aaron would start wearing those would start dressing like Tiger Ali Singh that have like the, you know, the Indian prince or Afghan prince outfits on, you know, with the funny hats and things like that. So,
dude, when they're that segment that we'll talk about later, but what they're wearing in that segment is outlandish.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, like it is. It's like the shine, it's like, and the glare.
It is. It's like Middle Eastern Dumb and Dumber. It's,
yeah, yeah.
It's pretty funny. So, all right. So at the moment, either Chaz or D'Lo have a slot in the 30-man Royal Rumble to determine.
And we waited with like bated breath to see who it was going to be.
Yes. Casual fans returning for Kai and Tai.
Yeah,
that's tremendous. All right, let us get down. Let us get down to business. Okay, our opener is the first of three championship matches on our undercard. The undercard is just absolutely rock solid.
Oh yeah,
we open with the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships. Now, JR, when we left Armageddon in Alabama, Edge and Christian had won the tag. More on you later. The tag team championships in that four-way at Armageddon. But, JR, we had a little hot potato action with the tag straps, didn't we?
Yeah, quite a bit of hot potato. Hot potato in the mix here. And that was since Armageddon, when Edge and Christian defeated the Right to Censor to win those tag straps, on the 12-18 Raw in Greenville, they lost to the super team of The Rock and Undertaker.
So weird.
Yeah, so the Rock and Taker had kind of a little mini feud going on in December. There's a long stretch between Armageddon and this show, so there was actually a lot of little mini feuds in December that kind of tapered before we got here. It was almost like old school, like 1990 or something. These feuds had died off between pay-per-views. But 3 days later on SmackDown, Kurt Angle was a special referee and gave an assist to his boys in Charlotte, and Edge and Christian regained the tag title. So paced on another run for them. What's that, five now, I think?
Yes.
All within the last year.
within the last 9.5 months?
Right, yeah, since Mania 16. Mania. Yep. The Dudleys received this title shot by defeating Right to Censor's Bull Buchanan and the Good Father on the January 4th SmackDown. Edge and Christian then attacked the Dudleys and gave them a vicious concerto on the final SmackDown leading into this in the big storyline, which I liked, and it's weird. I want to get into the ramifications of it after we talk about the match, but So I thought the storyline was well done. I thought the commentary was pretty focused on it, was the concussion suffered by the Dudleys and whether they'd be able to get back in the ring or not, and the targeting on the heads of Edge and Christian. Aaron, what did you think of that angle coming in? Did you think it added a little bit of needed heat to this one?
Absolutely, because the first thing I thought when they first came out was like, you know, it's kind of strange to see them in a regular match, you know, like they're not fighting with ladders or chairs, you know? And then when the commentator started talking about the discussion, it just heightened all the stakes of the match. Like every time they hit their head, every time they went for the pin, you're like, oh, like, are we going to get a relapse? You know, I loved it.
Mm. And both these teams were really on fire. I mean, they'd carried over one of the greatest years in wrestling history for tag teams and carried it over. Dudley's really had gained. I tell you something, JR, and we talked about it a lot during 2000 that the Dudleys, you know, had kind of lost their way a little bit between like April and October, and you know, came out of nowhere late fall to really start gaining a following again with the fans and and really were official baby faces. And by this time, they were serious pops. And kudos to them, because they were. What'd you think, Aaron? They were kind of like in a black hole in the middle of 2000, and then suddenly came out of nowhere and kind of got their mojo back.
Yeah, it's the silliest thing, but you know what I think really helped them was the addition of that stupid "What's Up" spot.
Yes.
Because when they do it in this match, the crowd loses their shit like completely, right? And I mean, it's such a silly thing, right? But just that combined, the D-Von get the tables, I felt kind of reinvigorated them, you know?
Yeah, I think that was definitely a big piece of it. I think the other part of it was just that they actually got focused on and used.
Yeah.
And not just...
Since they actually cared about them for like the first time in a while.
Right, yeah, exactly. They weren't just kind of buried in the background like they had been for the second half of 2000. And that kind of plays... half into my little kind of story on the mid card I want to get to. We'll talk about it after the next match, but it was interesting how they just completely revitalized them, and I thought it was good that they had the concussion hook to kind of add in the like we said, the heat that they needed to really get things back up and running, because they hadn't really crossed paths in a while outside of a couple multi tag matches. So I thought the concussion thing was a nice angle, and I thought it added a little bit of viciousness to Edge and Christian, something that had been missing through a lot of the comedy they had been working throughout the fall and into the winter. And I know Chad Campbell, though, mentioned this in his Royal Rumble 2001 Vintage Vault previewing on PlayStimulation.com. This is the match he chose. So if you want to read more of an in-depth review of the match, you can head there. He thinks that Edge and Christian's kind of goofiness and humor and comedy style takes away from their matches a lot of times, because when they try and get serious, it was hard to take them in that role. Scott, do you agree with that, or do you think that they did look vicious when they needed to?
No, I think they did. I slightly disagree with that. I think they were able to flip the switch because there were times against the Hardys where, yeah, they would be funny in skit form, but once they got down to brass tacks, like they're, you know, the match and Unforgiven in the cage, and they definitely could get down to business and protect their gold when they wanted to. So,
well, they could wrestle.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do you think they looked like, I don't say badasses, but like guys that were believable in targeting other guys' brains to do damage?
Yes, I think they did. No, I think they did. Because I think they when it came down to the end of it, they were protecting their gold at all costs, so they could get off the goofy train and really go at somebody when they wanted to. And they did it to the Hardys, and they did it to a few other teams, and they did it to the Dudleys. So I do think they were taken seriously, and I think that would help them as the year progressed when they would go in a slightly different direction. So yeah, I think they definitely I did think they definitely were taken seriously when they needed to be.
What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, and I think it worked really well because of their size, too, because, like, you used the word badass before, but they certainly aren't your typical badass-looking guys,
right?
So when they did get vicious, it was like, oh, okay, all right. Like, they're willing to do anything, right?
Yeah, I think so, and I would agree with that point. And I think having the straps back on them again, just as kind of the heel ace team of the promotion at this point, anytime they needed to get the belts back on some heels. I guess we had the RTC run, but that was pretty tough. But I mean, I think as a group, they needed to have the gold for a little bit to kind of establish them. But I think there's no doubt that Edge and Christian were the team to have the gold on until they found the next face team to put it on. And I kind of like that the Hardys had a short reign. To me, they don't scream long-term champions. They're just kind of, we ended the feud by winning the titles and then quickly move along. So, this, I thought, was a fitting feud, because even if you look back to 2000, these two teams never really had a singles feud.
No.
They were involved in the three-way feud, and then it was more Hardys and Edge and Christian, and even before that it was Hardys Dudleys. So we haven't really had these two teams involved in any kind of serious issue other than kind of three-way antics. So I thought that was kind of refreshing, too.
And it's kind of weird, too, because weren't the Dudleys, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, weren't the Dudleys last champions when they lost them at WrestleMania 16?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They haven't slipped the gold since.
That's it. So they never really had that blow off of Edge and Christian taking the titles from them.
Correct. Nope, they hadn't.
Yeah, weird.
Scott, did you like this as the opener?
Absolutely. I think it was the best spot. I think that all these title matches had their own story and their own spot, and I don't think any other match on the undercard would have fit in this place. So this was a perfect spot. Formatics and pre-production were prime on this night in terms of laying out this card. This is another one of those perfect shows where everywhere, everything that needed to go in the right spot did. And this was the perfect opener because you had a vicious feud and you had a lot of you know, violent spots, and both guys were really, both teams were really. Nah, nothing to laugh at, Art, this time. Sorry. Not in this three. We'll get back to you in a few months because we may need a giggle moment from you somewhere, but not during this next 3 month stretch. Yeah, perfect spot here. The other match is maybe you could have flip flopped another match, but I think this was the better position. It definitely fit being the opener.
I agree. And like Aaron mentioned, the crowd is red hot for the Was Up spot. And I think it was the right choice as well, especially when you consider the finish of the Dudleys going over clean at 10 minutes to win the tag titles now back, like you said, Aaron, for the first time since Mania 16. And I thought it was fitting to get the belts back on them. I thought they had gone a long time, kind of refreshed a little bit. They didn't really feel stale or anything here. But let me ask you this, Aaron, first. Did you think it was weird to see these teams go at it in a straight tag match with no gimmicks or anything involved? Like, did it feel odd to you for a change?
Yes, absolutely. Like, as soon as they came out, it's like, regular match? What's happening here? it was strange, too, to see them, only two of them. Because, you know, you associate the Hardys with them so strongly, you know? But they certainly went above and beyond and did it. Like, they do this spot with, they're doing the 3D and Edge stops it with a spear. Like, just great stuff. Like, yep. It was really refreshing to actually see them do the match without the gimmicks.
I agree. I thought it was different, and I thought it was impressive to see them do it and go at it for 10 minutes and not one, you know, not one table, not one chair, no ladder. I thought it was cool. And at the time, I remember being surprised. Like, it definitely felt weird. Like, wait a minute. These two teams can't fight without weapons. So I thought it was nice. I thought it was a nice touch to have the Dudleys win clean in a straight match without having gimmicks to rely upon.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just made the crowd super happy going forward for the rest of the show. You know?
Scott, any final thoughts on this one?
I agree with – I love that spot too, Aaron, where they're about to do the 3D and Edge comes out of nowhere and spears D-Von out of the move, and then Christian hit the perfect DDT. That was a great spot. I thought the match was going to end right there, actually.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah, I thought Edge and Christian were going to retain there. And I remember the crowd going nuts when D-Von kicked out. So it was pretty crazy. Was it D-Von? No, I'm sorry. Bubba Ray kicked out because he always is the backside. Yeah, when Bubba Ray kicked out of the spear, that was pretty awesome. So, it was just an incredible, a great opener. Crowd was hot, and they got what they wanted. Dudley Boys, new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champion. Two times.
Here we go.
Down there?
Yep.
Give it time. We'll meet this guy soon enough. Yeah, a great match, good spot in the opener, and again, new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, the Dudley Boys, D-Von and Bubba Ray, and two-time champions. But again, one more quick thing about the chemistry, considering they hadn't wrestled in months, they didn't miss a beat, so
definitely
a top match to open the show. Now, we continue on. First, a couple of the only issue with this show is there was a lot of, just like I felt like Armageddon, a lot of fill, and which is weird because the show was long enough as it was, but we had a lot of backstage stuff that I felt was a little not unnecessary, but probably could have been skipped.
But ridiculous? Would you maybe use the word ridiculous there?
We start with the number one contender for the World Wrestling Federation Championship, Triple H.
And just my thought on that, I kind of like them all, though. Like, I agree with you. It seemed like a lot of stuff, and a lot of them were ridiculous, but I kind of enjoyed them all. I think that was a good vibe. Like, everyone seemed kind of upbeat, and everyone seemed pretty on point, except for one person we'll talk about in a second. Mm-hmm. But I kind of liked them. I felt they all led somewhere. I didn't feel like any of them were too just random.
Well, mm-hmm. And the rest of the tone of the show is pretty violent and bloody.
I agree.
Like, so it's fine.
Yeah. Speaking of violent and bloody, number one contender, the game Triple H, with his wife in their locker room, and he tells her that her feud, or her burgeoning hatred of Trish Stratus, we'll talk about that later, can't interfere in the title match. Then all of a sudden, we saw him earlier on, you know who arrived, JR, at the New Orleans Arena? And a very
time
long
to play the game.
No, I was not there. Wish I was. But no, a long limousine pulled up, and who came out? Comedian Drew Carey.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Star of the Drew Carey Show. And what's the other show?
Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Whose Line Is It Anyway? Yes.
It actually just came back without him. But I haven't. Have you watched any of the new ones, Aaron?
No.
I was wondering.
No,
if
I haven't either.
It's not a good. I mean, I loved it at the time.
Yeah,
me and Mr. Adam Murray used to watch it religiously back in college. Yes. Every week we watched it. We recorded it. I'm a big Drew Carey fan. I always loved the show. I just think he's a funny guy, and I was excited to have him involved in the show. I thought he was funny. I thought he knew nothing about wrestling, but he threw himself into it, so that was admirable. He didn't seem like he didn't want to not be there. You know, like he kind of embraced the fact that he didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, he didn't look down on it in any way. Like, he was just having fun.
Yeah. Now, later on, we get back to this current segment. He comes in the room. He introduces himself and to Stephanie and to Hunter. And I think the best part is when Drew Carey tells him, hey, you know, I ran into Kamala the other day.
Yeah, he said they ran into him at the airport or something like that.
Yeah,
it seems so like he was trying to squeeze it in. They just, like, completely no-sold it. But when I mentioned that someone was just really off in their kind of acting on this evening, and the person I met was Stephanie.
Oh, God, yes.
Who was getting tons of increased TV time at this point. I mean, like, all over the place in December and into January. And CRZ and his reviews was just trashing her for her acting at this point. And she is brutal in the scene with the the fake oversell of Drew saying he's doing the pay-per-view about Whose Line Is It Anyway. The, ha-ha, all right, that sounds great. Like, it was really bad.
No, but the worst...
It's the Vince McMahon fake laugh she does.
Yes, yes.
And the line when she says, you know, when he asks, oh, where can I find Vince McMahon? And she goes, what do you want with my dad? And she puts her hands up. It's almost like she read it on a cue card behind Drew Carey's head. It's like, what do you want with my dad? It's like, it was awful. Her delivery was abysmal that night.
Yeah, not good.
And she babbles and babbles, and then she says she's going to go take him to Trish Stratus's locker. And, of course, she's trying to, you know, get Vince pissed off and all this other stuff. So she goes off and goes off with him to Trish's locker room. Next segment, which was actually one of the funnier ones, we go to our boys, the APA. Farouk and Bradshaw playing cards.
Always pounding ass, baby.
Pounding beers and ass and other things. And they were like, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And we're like, what's going on here? Typical tongue-in-cheek attitude era humor. And, of course, what they're talking about is they show each other their Rumble numbers. And they laugh. Oh, that's going to be interesting. Ha, ha, ha. Then Crash Holly knocks on the door, comes in, tells him, really fast, no hard feelings, guys, but he's going to throw them both over the top rope, and then he walks back out. And then they just have this look, and Bradshaw looks at Farouk and goes, and they say we're drunk. it was a great little few minutes. That was very funny. Those guys were great. Those guys were on fire in any segment they were in.
Yep, they were really funny. And the TNA-PA thing had been put to bed by this point. Yep. We'll get into Tess and Albert later, but the APA had defeated them on Raw to end that feud officially, so they ripped up the TNA-PA paraphernalia.
Yes. Yes, they did. And so they were back to being just TNA, and they were in the groove, both in the ring and definitely on the mic for any of their skits. All right, next up, we have our... Oh, I miscounted. I said three title matches. We actually have four.
Yep.
Four title matches. Every match on this undercard is for a championship. That doesn't happen very often. Up now, the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship is on the line. And it's a continuation of what could easily, and Aaron, I'm curious on your opinion here, easily could be considered feud of the year for 2000, at least top three candidate. Your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, the Rabid Wolverine, Chris Benoit, who trashed the one Billy Gunn.
And he's here and very mad.
And he's, yes, and he's here and very angry. And he left Billy Gunn crying in his own great theme song. At Armageddon.
A big pool of his own theme song.
A big pool of his own theme song, because he had it all, except the belt. Yes. Now, he's taking on a guy that he beat, three times?
He beat like a rep-headed stepson.
In 2000. He beat him at Backlash, beat him at Judgment Day, and then beat him at SummerSlam. But all three matches were incredible, and that is, of course, the other Canadian Chris, and that is Chris Jericho. But to add a little juice to this, because we've already seen them in simple singles matches, the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship was hanging above the ring, and we would have a ladder match.
Like I said before, I said it to you, Mean Gene, I said it to everybody. It's just a matter of time when Campatera gets in full gear and runs the World Wrestling Federation, or rids the World Wrestling Federation of the likes of you, Weasel, and King Kong Bundy, Ray, Hercules, Orndorff, all of you. You're all going to go down one by one, and I'm going to make sure of that. For the whipping that you gave me, whip me like a red-headed stepson. I'm sick and tired of that type of treatment.
We don't want him running the world. What sounds better, my songs for Kurt or that?
Running the world, running the Red Wrestling Federation.
Running the Red Wrestling Federation.
It's a shame he lost that election to Jack Tunney. Otherwise, it would have been a completely different landscape with him running it.
Everybody would have creamy leg stockings and bad perms.
Yeah.
Oh God.
All right. Patera, 88.
Yeah. So
couldn't have been any worse than Dukakis, right, Scott?
Exactly. He didn't win many more states than Mondale did.
What was it like voting in that election?
It was joyous for all three of them up until 92.
Dukakis was an awesome name if you were like seven in this area.
Yeah, like, that was
so much fun to say, Dukakis.
Oh, Dukakis? Yeah, I know. All right, so we have the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship hanging above the ring in a ladder match. The first Intercontinental title ladder match in 2.5 years. Aaron George, can you remember the last one?
Was it the SummerSlam 98, right?
Of course it was.
Yeah.
Triple H defeated.
Congratulations, you win the next trivia contest.
There you go. There you got your trivia question. All right, good night. Get rid of him.
Surprised you didn't say I was wrong. All right.
All right.
No, you're wrong. It was Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels from 1992. No.
I fucking knew it.
Fucking Chad Campbell. Why don't you get him on the where the big boys play? Hey, should make back everybody.
Yeah, then you'll be really good at the trivia. You know, I'll clap him.
All right. What I loved about this, and I mentioned to you earlier today, JR, when I was rewatching it, they play this awesome video package before the match, and it's just a montage of the three matches they had in 2000, and it was just awesome. And they're just beating the shit out of each other.
Yep.
There was no better feud that you made out of nothing, that you had no real legwork to have to do. It's just two guys with a little history, both coming from Western Canada, and you both knew they were exemplary in the ring, and they just obliterated each other. So simple. So simple. And the montage was great. They're showing clips from all three of those matches. They're just killing each other. And
hardly any talking in that montage either. Just music and violence.
Yep. It was JR saying two guys, you know, they had that dun 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 dun. It was like that kind of instrumental beat up music that Jim Johnson has in his montage. And it was just outstanding. And I think that's what made the match even better, is that we didn't need any real backstory. They just hated each other. Jericho wanted what Benoit had, and Benoit knew that he thought Jericho couldn't beat him. I didn't realize, as I was looking at our original review, JR, that I actually gave this 5 stars. I didn't realize that. I thought I gave it 4.5.
I think it's close.
I gave it 5 stars. It's an incredible match. I mean, 1844... they're just killing each other.
Yeah.
And the two great spots. The one spot at the end when Jericho hooks Benoit on the walls on the ladder. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But the spot of the match, and maybe one of the most vicious spots of the entire Attitude Era, there's not many close to this, is when Jericho is sitting outside. He just got thrown into the ladder, which was in the corner, and he's kind of crawling around. Benoit goes for like a plancha or a tope or one of those like spears through the ropes, and Jericho just absolutely creams him with a chair.
I thought that was so hard to watch.
Yeah,
I thought it really was. I thought it made it really this. I'm pretty good at watching this stuff with Benoit, but that was one that kind of made me cringe. It was great at the time. It was awesome live and just unnecessary. I mean, he could have just missed the dive. Like, he didn't need to get smashed across the unprotected face with a chair. As great of a spot it is, just knowing where it led. I don't like to get into it too much on the show, but that was this one spot that really, really was tough for me to kind of stomach today watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what's crazy, too, is his head almost hits the barrier, too. Like, if you look where he lands, it's like an inch away. So it would have been fine, just like that.
Yeah, very weird. I mean, visually, I'm not trying to glorify it as much, but I mean, it was pretty crazy. But I mean, God, I mean, I wonder if Jericho even realized I don't even think Jericho really swung. I think Benoit pretty much just threw himself into it.
It was ugly. It was definitely, again, great at the time, really cool. But looking back, a lot of the stuff from, you know, 99 through like 03 is just kind of tough to watch for a lot of guys, knowing where the bodies were headed. But
yeah,
it doesn't take away from this match at all in the context of the match. Again, just flawless, really. And the guys just beat the crap out of each other. And I think Brad said it earlier, we were talking to him, how nothing really looked contrived or forced, and everything just looked natural. The use of the ladder didn't look out of place. Like, there weren't any forced ladder shots. Everything was pretty smooth, and even up to the walls on the ladder, which is a really cool spot. Just a neat visual, even if it didn't really make too much sense. But Jericho locked the walls across the top of the ladder. Just one of those moments that's kind of etched into your memory that, you know, you always think of when you think of this match. And Jericho at 1844 regains the title by grabbing hold of it, by climbing the ladder. Now, this is the point I wanted to make, and I'm curious on your guys' take on this. Did you think it was kind of interesting how they rebooted the mid-card between the Dudleys and Jericho? So you have these two guys. They were the champions. They were kind of red hot in early 2000. Both kind of flailed away through the back half of 2000. And then you get to the winter again here in the Rumble, the beginning of the year, and all of a sudden they're back on top, have their goal. It's almost like they came out of nowhere to reboot the division after the back half of the year. Do you guys think that was interesting?
But I think they kind of needed it too, because not that they buried them, but the way they lost the matches they lost in 2000 didn't exactly help their characters, right? Like, starting a Fully Loaded and going on, like, they were both kind of considered like dead main eventers almost. And I don't mean dead. That's a horrible pun, and I did not mean to make it.
Yeah, no,
but
it's like,
they just weren't, they weren't viewed at that level anymore. And I thought it was a good, I thought it was actually a pretty shrewd move to give them a hot feud with a great match and kind of see where it goes. And I think it works.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Aaron, it's, JR and I are doing, have done our best so far through these first year to tiptoe through the adjective tulips.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry about it. But yeah, I mean, JR, you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, the mid card in 2000 was really solid to begin with, but Benoit went through that kind of, you know, main eventish phase from July through like October when he was with Rock and had a couple title matches.
Right. Well, I wasn't really talking Benoit. I was talking more Jericho and Dudley's. Those three guys were kind of forgotten the second half of 2000, and it's almost like, oh, we're getting back to the road to Mania, but the title's back on these two guys. Like, it was just kind of weird how like the three of them had kind of not done much, and they both got elevated back up at the same time to where they were the year before. Like, Rumble 2000, Jericho was the IC champ, and the Dudleys were on the way, basically, to winning the tag titles. And here, they put them back on them after kind of both guys doing not much of anything since SummerSlam.
Yeah.
I mean, Jericho kind of got stuck in the feud with X-Pac in the fall, and then he, of course, you know, he had the two-match feud with Kane. So, yeah, he was definitely kind of not drowning, but he was kind of mired in the lower mid-card. And as we've talked about with the Dudleys, they were just kind of stuck as well. And now it's like, all right, reboot. We need these guys to, you know, get these guys back up to the middle of the top. We got to get Mania going and, you know, Rumble coming up and that kind of thing. Yeah, definitely seemed like a reboot.
But even Benoit, like, I know you didn't mean him, but, like, even him, like, I mean, when first he loses to Rock at Fully Loaded, then, like, he loses in that four-way, then he loses to Triple H. Like, you gotta do something with him, right, to get him back up there.
Yep, and I thought the way that he kind of – it's almost like they immediately elevated the title back up. And it's not like – Val and Eddie were bad workers, but they weren't really pushed as any kind of legit stars at that point. So to get the belt on Benoit almost felt like, all right, we're done dicking around the IC title. Let's get it back up with the big boys. And that's what it felt like, getting it back on him and then into the feud with Jericho with the ladder match.
Yeah, it felt much more important after this match than it did before, too, just because of the quality of the match, right?
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it that they needed to kind of reshuffle things and get ready for what was to come for 2001.
Did you feel done with this feud after this match?
Yes, I did. Yeah, because I think the whole crux of it was, besides the fact there were two outstanding workers, that Jericho had not beaten them.
Right.
He got pinned. You know, Benoit pinned him at Mania as part of the three-way. Beat him at Backlash. Beat him at Judgment Day.
Beat him at SummerSlam.
Beat him at SummerSlam. You know, never didn't really touch him. And that I think that was the crux of the feud. I think Jericho finally got the one win, and that was it.
I also felt like I was done with it because I wasn't sure they could top it.
Right. No, I don't think they could.
Like, anything would have been an immediate letdown if they fought again right after this. Like, I feel like they definitely needed a break.
Yep, I agree. So, for me, it's 5 stars. It's the first. It's the first, you know, perfect match in a while, and it was like we've talked about. It was a harbinger of what was to come for 2001 in terms of work rate. Mm-hmm. We saw pieces of it in 2000. It was. I feel like 2001, the roster really started to ripple, and I think it was getting contagious. And we'll definitely document that over the next 3 vaults tonight and the next two. So Chris Jericho, your new World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion. Now, we have four-time champ, or I have four-time champ, but I believe it's his, I think it's only his third, because I think he says three, but is it four? I want to confirm that. Pretty sure that at the time, we'll talk about the next match, I'll look it up, but I think it's actually only his third. I'll have to look at that again. I might be right thinking it's his fourth, but he says his third in the post-match promo a little bit later on, so. All right, back to JR's boy, DC.
Yeah, Big Drew.
Drew Carey, trying, of course, use some pretty horrendous sitcom lines to pick Trish up. Vince comes in, clearly knowing he's trying to pick him up and not realizing Stephanie was trying to set him up. So, Drew Carey asks about his pay-per-view, which is coming up. Do you remember, JR? It was Super Bowl weekend?
Yes. Yep.
Did you get it?
No.
No. I wonder if it ever made it to VHS or DVD.
Probably.
It was like an all-star kind of all-star comedy jam kind of thing.
Yeah, well, you remember all the names. You had Greg Proops, Wayne Brady, Ryan Stiles, Colin Mochrie. Good stuff.
The whole crew.
I feel like it was probably just going to be like a dirty version of whose line is it anyway.
I'm sure it was a little bit racy.
Yeah. And he asks Vince, I want some tips. How can I market the pay-per-view? You're the pay-per-view master. You know, how can I... And he decides, well, why don't you jump right in? And I got a great idea. Why don't you get involved in the Rumble tonight? Drew Carey looks at him like he shot his dog. What? And Stephanie, you know, of course, Trish using her feminine wiles, go, I think that's a great idea. And Drew's like, yeah, what the hell? that's like one of us being asked to be in the Rumble. Yeah, what the hell?
Hey, he has his own improv show.
There we go. So...
He's going to learn all he needs to know about pay-per-view fighting Kane. That's going to teach him the lesson.
I want to learn so much about pay-per-view, and you're the best guy to teach me, Vince McMahon.
So there we go. So Drew Carey's in the Rumble, but that would make 31 guys.
What?
We'll find out who gets bumped a little bit later on. All right, we go now to, speaking of the guy Chris Benoit destroyed at Armageddon, left with nothing but his pride and a great entrance theme, the one... Billy Gunn, trying to talk China out of her women's championship match coming up momentarily due to her recent neck injury, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. But China wants nothing to do with it. She is going to go out and teach Ivory and the Right to Censor a lesson. And that is what's up next. Our third match of the evening, third title match of the evening, the World Wrestling Federation women's title on the line, as Ivory, who's held it for a while now, she's pretty much the face of our Right to Censor now. She's like the most heat of anybody in the group at this point.
Definitely, yeah. They're all kind of just backing her up.
Yeah.
Yeah, Richard's just managing her at this point.
Yeah, the other guy's just kind of doing whatever. I mean, Val was kind of doing his own thing. Still part of the RTC, but Ivory's clearly the stud of the group here. Mm.
Taking on China in her... I can't believe this. She's been here since February of 1997, and this is her first... women's title shot. It's crazy. She had more title shots of the men's belts than she has the women's title. Now, the hook of this...
What the hell is this shit?
What are you saying? China doesn't deserve it?
No, I think he's echoing my thoughts on this feud that we're going to get to.
Yes.
Ivory and Val Venus, the night after Armageddon, gave China a spike pile driver, busted her neck up, and sent her to the sideline. She did a serious sit-down interview with JR. Said she may have to retire or have the doctors fuse the discs in her neck. Ivory would then mock the interview with Val portraying JR. It's pretty funny.
It's hilarious.
Yes.
She's in the neck brace and everything.
She went through therapy, came back on the SmackDown before the show, and accepted Ivory's challenge for the Rumble. Ivory had made the challenge on Sunday Night Heat that week, thinking China would not be able to compete. So I was fine with the storyline leading up to this. Like, it was pretty basic. They gave her the pile driver, knock her out of action. And you had to do it in a way because you need to make China vulnerable. Because she's just going to, I mean, she's been competing with men, you know, women winning men's titles. And now you put her in there with women half her size. You need to do something to make it believable that she can compete. So I'm cool with that. My beef was what happened in the match. Mm-hmm. And that is, of course, about 3 minutes in, China goes for a handspring elbow and has the weakest, worst-looking collision of all time.
Oh, it is terrible.
Where her neck supposedly snapped back, and she collapses in the ring. She can't move. And they do the awful, awful, awful JR doing the serious voice. And to me, the worst part was Lawler getting in the ring to check on her, just like he did for Owen Hart. I just thought this whole thing was pointless. I thought it was kind of tasteless. I didn't really see the point in doing it. It wasn't going to add any kind of heat to a kind of a monotonous feud. And nothing anyone wanted to see. You know, and I get why King was involved, because he had been involved kind of in the feud a little bit due to the RTC leading up to the show. But it hit a little bit too close to home with all that stuff. And it was just stupid. I mean, the bump looked awful. Like, do another pile driver at least. Don't do this stupid handspring and she snaps her head and it barely even hits anything. It looked terrible. I thought it completely wrecked the momentum that the show was building.
Yeah. And JR had the balls to call that handspring thing whiplash. Like, the commentary.
I think he was trying to dig himself out of, trying to dig the whole segment out of the shitter. Oh, maybe it was when her head went upside down and she whipped back fast. It's like,
yeah, that's it, JR.
And just a quick note, I am correct. Jericho was actually wrong on his own thing. That was his fourth Intercontinental title reign. Incidentally, Jericho did beat Benoit in 2000. It was not on pay-per-view, though. He beat him for the IC title back.
That's right, on TV. Day.
So yeah, but not, he didn't beat him on pay-per-view. All right, JR, you hit the nail on the head. It's an absolute shit show. And I love Ivory. I don't even think it's Ivory's fault. It's a little bit of China's fault, yes, but I think JR and King kind of ruined this whole thing. There was no need to do the whole, Lawler with the very hushed sentences like, Billy Gunn told her not to be in this match, JR. And, I was in the ring and she wasn't moving her hand. I don't know. She wasn't moving her hand. Like, come on, King. Seriously. It was dreadful.
It was too much.
Yeah. Too much.
Just no need, and for the wrong person to do it with.
Yes.
Like, yeah. The crowd cared so much that as they were carting her out, they started chanting for Sergeant Slaughter, who was, like, helping her. Like, it's just the wrong person, you know?
Absolutely.
And you know what? There is a way to do those injury angles, but you don't do the hushed voice. Like even when Randy Savage was getting bit with the snake, Vince McMahon was losing his shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't this is not part of the show, guys. The snake was not devenomized. You know, it's not that.
Or Jack Tunney trying to give the straight face that the snake was indeed devenomized.
I accept his explanation that it was an accident.
Yeah.
Hey, he's from your country, all right, Aaron?
Yeah, I know. We're proud of Jack Tunney, all right? It's our number one export.
What about Jacques Rougeau's dad? He should have been commissioner.
Fuck him. Fuck Jacques Rougeau. Long live the Mountie, right?
Or the Quebecer.
Or the
amazing French Canadian.
The amazing French Canadians, yes.
The rant they go on at the end of that Quebecer song about Americans, if you understand French, it's a work of beauty.
I believe JR, based on our written reviews, that this might be the only time in pay-per-view history that we give a match a 5 and a match a 0 on the same show.
Back to back.
Oh, no!
Yeah, exactly. Lexi, Flexi, Lexi. All right. Back to the behind-the-scenes backstage skits. Stephanie, continuing her Oscar-winning work this evening, goes into the makeup room because she apparently lost a bobby pin or whatever the fuck she was talking about. Such a mess. And Trish is already in there. And, of course, they're bad-mouthing each other and trash-talking. And Trish says she won't interfere in Stephanie's affairs. She has her own affair to deal with.
Uh-huh. Oh, a little saucy. A little saucy here in the jungle.
You little vixen. Now back to the JR's already pre-picked MVP of this pay-per-view. DC himself. Drew Carey has handed some clothes to wrestle.
Well, I guess I'm a wrestler now.
Woohoo! and then he attempts to strike up a conversation. Look at this. What did he say? Oh, look at this masked weirdo.
Yeah, he's like, who's this freak in the mask or something, he said when he comes in.
He's talking about Kane, who's, you know, is at his, as we talked about in Armageddon, JR is at his most jacked at this point. And we obviously could tell where that went. So.
And it's your guy, Bruno Lauer, who brings him the gear in an XFL jacket, of all things.
The XFL jackets were all over the place. There was some clips of Stephanie wearing one on like an episode of SmackDown or whatever.
I'm trying to remember how much. I'm trying to go back to Shop Zone. I'm trying to remember how much they were. They were the good, the nice ones, right? The varsity ones with the leather sleeves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They had to have been, what do you think, a couple hundred, probably?
I'm sure they weren't cheap.
Sure
now they're probably like $12, $13, like somewhere. Probably just scoop them up. You know what?
JR and I would still wear them.
I would definitely wear one.
Yeah. I still have a shirt to this day, all right? So
I still have my New York, New Jersey Hitmen. We're gonna go over the standings and the scores and everything. We'll find them at some point throughout 2001. All right. So Drew Carey's got his clothes and he's ready to go. Now, we mentioned earlier that Vince adding Drew Carey to the Rumble made it 31 dudes. Sadly, somebody had to go.
Oh.
And guess who had to go?
Lowdown!
Yes.
In there. Of course, Vince breaks it to him. And I like because they spend like 3 minutes arguing over which one's going to be in the match.
Yeah.
Like it matters. And then Vince comes in and tells them to get bumped. And Tiger Ali was so good. He's like kind of this weird kissing up, but kind of angry. He's like, so Vince, tell me, what great superstar is entering the Royal Rumble to make us not be in it? And he's like, Drew Carey. And then just walks away. Tiger just kind of stares off into the distance. But
Tiger keeps going, Drew Curry?
Yeah, sorry, Drew Curry.
It's Drew Curry. It's like, what
the...
I just imagine in that segment, too, that that's the only time Vince McMahon has ever spoken to either of them.
He's like, well, Tiger. I like how... It did fit their gimmick, though, because the whole running gimmick was that they got no respect from anyone. They get locked out of buildings and no one knew who they were. So it kind of was fitting that they're the ones that got fucked out of this.
Yeah.
This probably made them more memorable than just like a 2-minute Chaz appearance in the Rumble anyway. So this was probably better off for them.
Pretty much. Okay. Now, our fourth and final. Okay, Aaron, you have to. Oh.
Now, can you sing this song in French for us, Aaron?
Yes, you have
to. Chant del feu. Pour toujours, un rêve de moi et toi pour toujours. Dis que vous le croyez, dis que vous le croyez. J'ai jamais rencontré un homme comme toi dans ma vie. Je veux trouver dans l'anus.
Sounds like those what era was it? 95 when they had the French announcers.
That may become one of my favorite moments in Place to Be history right there.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Those guys, those announcers are our heroes, okay? So don't laugh at them.
I know, Scott. That's a little rude.
We're going to have to do like FAP instead of SAP. We're going to have FAP.
A fruit channel on your computer.
And speaking of fapping, that's what Scott was doing as Triple H made his arrival here in the arena.
Yes. Because right now we have our World Wrestling Federation Championship match.
Yeah.
As we have the number one contender, as he just mentioned. And actually,
I'd be remiss if he didn't mention the amount that he growls before we see him.
Yeah, he looked in the mirror and he did that weird. Yeah, I didn't. That
was awful. I thought it was like a joke at first.
Nope. I was getting kind of creeped out at it too myself, to be honest with you.
That's how serious he is, guys. He's a serious competitor.
He sounded like when Forrest Gump is making the noises after his mom has sex with the fucking teacher or whatever. He's like, <"Ugh!" laughs>
That's so fun. But he debuts on this night. After the kind of morphed, that's in the theme too. After that kind of hybrid theme he had the last few pay-per-view 2000, he officially debuts The Game by Motorhead. I thought you were going to play my thing, but you did it earlier. Yes, he He's now had that theme officially for the Lex for the next eternity, pretty much. So debuts. He debuted it on Raw like a couple weeks earlier, but this is the pay-per-view debut.
He debuted it when he attacked Austin, right?
Like, yes,
when he cost the. I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yep, that was on the January 8th Raw. Okay, Aaron, do verse 2 in French. Go ahead.
Fuck, I didn't hear any of the words. I'm sorry, guys.
Never get tired of the Fugees.
Je t'aime, je t'aime. Je t'aime.
That is, of course, the great Benny Mardones.
That is a miss they did, huh? Mr. Fuji doing a duet with the Fugees, or I guess it would be a quartet. There were three Fugees, right?
Yes. No, there were...
Mr. Fuji la.
I think there were four Fugees. If you count Mr. Fuji.
Yeah, there were four Fugees with if you have Mr. Fuji. Yeah, otherwise, it was just Proswell, Wyclef, and, of course, Lauryn Hill.
Well, my girl, Lauryn Hill. Of course.
What a Survivor Series team they would have made.
Yes. Yes. And on this side, we have the Fugees. Lauryn Hill, Wyclef Jean, Pros, Mr. Fuji.
All right, as we turn the corner on 2001, JR, your boy, had one of the most incredible calendar years in the history of professional wrestling. Has anyone had a better – well, we'll skip November, December of 99 because those were kind of like warm-up months. January to December 2000, did anybody ever have – I think it was better than Diesel's calendar year, I got to say.
Yeah, I think it was because he was world champion for more than Diesel was during that calendar year, right? Although Diesel, I mean, when you kick his off, though, do you say, because, I mean, he didn't win his first title, his IC title, until after Mania 10. So if you're counting 10 to 11 for his year, or are we just counting, like, from their debut? They're close.
Yeah.
I mean, Kurt, it's tough to compare, honestly, though. Kurt, there's way much more TV. There were way much more opportunities for Kurt to shine. All the mic time. I mean, Diesel was still at the era where the champions weren't always on TV. You know, he was kind of the background to Shawn for most of it. That was just a role he was given. I mean, I think they're apples and oranges. Both still impressive. But Kurt, I mean, if you really want to measure, I would say yes, Kurt has had the most successful rookie year to this point.
And I mean, you know, it is a tough comparison. I mean, Diesel's defense... You know, you're right. I mean, less pay-per-views, and there was never any... The difference was there was never any doubt that Kurt was... Like, Kurt never had a you know, do-or-die moment, you know, where Diesel did. Kurt was pretty much bred for success the minute he got here, whereas Diesel was, you know, took a bunch of guys from West Warwick, Rhode Island to save Diesel's job.
And Kurt also, too, had, like, much more competition. Like, not to say that 94 sucked or anything, but I mean, like, you got Jericho, you got Benoit, you got Guerrero, you got a plethora of mid-carders that they could push, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I think that's a great point.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Diesel was pretty much the click, and yeah. That was it. The click.
He's big. Play. He's big and tall. Put the title on him.
Yeah. Yeah. I got 50 in the West
Indies. Little Wyclef.
Wyclef! Kurt definitely, just has had a magnificent year, and the title matches, both his title matches on pay-per-view, his win over Undertaker at, Survivor Series. And then of course the, winning the cell at Armageddon, call him cheap if you want. I think that's kind of how the storyline needed to be, but he held his own. I mean, he's fought all the big studs. In the company.
And he's been booked strong as a character. He hasn't been booked like a pussy. The matches have kind of gone that way. But he's always looked to be smart. Of course, he had the great stuff over Christmas. If you remember, he had his whole family come out, and they all have the Santa hats on, and they march around backstage. He's introducing him to people. So A lot of cool stuff with that. And he's been booked as a strong character on TV, I thought. And, of course, they had the mini tournament leading up to TV where they determined who would get a title shot on TV. And as Aaron mentioned before, he referenced Steve Austin won. And, of course, that match went down on the January 8th Raw. That was a big match, if you remember. There was a ton of hype behind that one. And that was the first kind of live Raw because they actually aired Raw as taped, but they aired on Christmas and New Year's Day that year. So kind of an odd year for them. But then, so the January 8th was like their big one that they built to. And then, of course, Triple H made his comeback. He had been out since Hell in a Cell, and he made his comeback and won there. So, Scott, do you want to take a minute here? I guess we should talk about what happened with the commissioner and all that stuff with Vince. So, as we talked about at Armageddon, coming out of Hell in a Cell, Foley was kind of on the hot seat due to all the guys getting injured under his watch. They were pressuring him to resign. He refused to do so, and they were teasing a lot going on. Vince McMahon had claimed he wanted a divorce from Linda. I want a divorce! And so then she went into a comatose state due to shock. And Stephanie was all pissed at her father, or so we thought. And then they on one episode of Raw, they kind of brought everything together where Stephanie revealed that she was in on it. Linda was out of action, pretty much out of commission, and they were able to wrest control of the company away from her while she was incapacitated. And Stephanie revealed that she was in cahoots with Vince. And now her and Vince would be running the show, and they beat the piss out of a couple different guys, including Foley, and Vince officially fired Foley as commissioner. So Foley's run ends after about 6 months, from June to December. An interesting one. I thought it was pretty good. I was surprised at the time when they got rid of him, because I thought that he had a lot of legs left and a lot of gas in the tank in this role. Do you guys agree? Were you surprised when Foley was bumped already?
Yeah. Yeah, they could have pushed it further.
I think so,
absolutely.
Too. Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, it was time to really push. I think I think one of the key points of it was to push Trish to the forefront. I think Vince really liked her and wanted her to really advance, and, you know, managing Test and Albert really wasn't, she was kind of spinning her wheels there a little bit. So I think this was the time for her to really step up and be a major player. So,
and Foley too, like, wasn't like an obtrusive commissioner, you know, like, it's not like, I mean, he was on TV a lot, but it's not like he wasn't kind of shoved down our throats the way some commissioners have been.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I don't know. Like, they could have gone longer. And you're right about Trish. They had to do something more with her. I mean, she's a pretty good commodity there.
Yeah. So she, of course, began having an affair with Vince McMahon. It was kind of teased. They hadn't really been completely outed at this point. They did the thing where Vince was at the soup kitchen over Christmas, and Trish was with him and all that stuff. And here then she ends up joining Angle as his advisor finally after all the teasing they did in the fall. So a lot of heat here between Stephanie, Trish, Kurt, Triple H, Vince in the mix. Stephanie was pissed because she didn't want Trish honing in on her dad. Still kind of loyal to her mom, even though they had sedated her. Just a lot of weird shit going on.
And of course, advising, you know, her husband's opponent.
Right,
you know,
yep. And tons of Stephanie on TV at this point.
Oh, wow. A lot.
It's like we don't watch Days of Our Lives because we don't want to, you know? Like, and then we get it on this wrestling show.
I mean, I didn't mind the stuff with her and Hunter a year ago.
No, it was fine.
But now it's like we're back at it with her and Vince again. Now, Vince is fine alone. You know, he doesn't need lieutenants like his daughter.
No.
Now, the match. Watching this match very closely tonight, because I really wanted to see if it was affected as much as it was, if it affected the match in any way quality-wise. And really, it did. I didn't want it to. I wanted to like the match more than I do. And I just can't. I mean, you graded higher than I do, JR, on our written review. I want to like it more, but just all the shit just... It just kind of ruined the flow. Aaron, what do you think? I want to hear your opinion on this. Did you think that all this interference and all the Trish stuff standing outside and Vince and all this other just like... took all the starch out of the match that was lost when the momentum really started. In the middle of the match, it seemed like the momentum was really starting to build, and then all this shit on the outside just brought it to a halt, and they never really were able to put the foot on the gas again.
Yeah, like, I knew we were in trouble when the video package was all about Trish and Steph. Like, it wasn't about their feud. And not only that, during the match, they don't make any mention of their old angle or anything like that. And I mean, the match is fine. They're doing a lot of kind of ground-based submission stuff, which is okay. It's different than kind of what both of them usually do, I find. But you're right, when the McMahon stuff starts, like, they cut to the outside of the ring for like, I don't know, like a minute and a half, you know? And it's just an outlandish time. Like what? I can't imagine what they were doing in the ring, just lying, I guess, just lying there. But yeah, it just didn't get started. The wheels kept spinning, and I don't know. I always found that of most of the Attitude Era wrestlers, I find it weird that these two didn't have better chemistry.
I'm going to agree with that point. I agree that their matches have been great, but I'm going to disagree in that I actually enjoyed this match. And I was surprised. I remember at the time not liking it at all. Like, I agree with you guys. I feel like it never got going, a lot of choppiness. But then when I watched it again, I kind of dug it. I kind of liked how Kurt was desperate early, and they played that up on commentary, kept destroying Hunter's knee. Stephanie played a good role, distracting the ref. Hunter took advantage, and then you have Trish come out. And I thought the cat fight was kind of necessary because that had been such a big part of the feud. Trish and Stephanie was really the crux of the whole Vince stuff. And, you know, them kind of fighting over him and Vince dragging them off to the back. And I thought all that stuff was kind of funny, and it sets up a pretty good, surprisingly good match next month. But I didn't mind that. And I didn't mind Austin interfering. Usually I'm not a big fan of that, especially with Angle's reign. But it really paid off all the back and forth of Austin and Triple H, especially since Triple H had fucked him a couple weeks before. It made sense to have Austin screw him back and set up their big match in February. So I was fine with it. I thought the overbooking here actually kind of worked. I think if they had just worked a straight match, it may not have been as good because there was so much nonsense going around with them in the feud anyway that it kind of made it all come together and pay off.
Yeah, I just think they could have maybe, like, I agree with the Austin. I think the Austin thing was totally necessary. I just think with these two guys, with their history, they could have done more than they ended up doing. And I feel they just ignored the history, and then so they needed to do, like you said, the cat fights and the run-ins and all
that.
So
you mean as far as drudge back up the Stephanie stuff?
Yeah, well, or at the very least mention that they had a heated rivalry in the past. Because they, what I mean, like we briefly talked about feuds of the year of 2000, but that was one of the more interesting feuds of the year, right? Triple H and Angle. Like, it was an interesting story. It grew. And then there's just no mention of it, and it's not part of the storyline anymore. And so, like, then that's when you have to create, quote-unquote, artificial things to make the story, right?
But I don't feel like it was artificial, though, because I feel like it was just the next big storyline.
Yeah, no, I don't think in this case it was necessarily artificial, but I thought what they choose to go was weaker than what they could have done. But that's just me being armchair booker, right? Like,
yeah, I think I was just done. I think I was done with them fighting over Stephanie. Like I was good with that. I kind of like the addition of Trish because she had already been on the kind of in the shadows of that feud back in the fall.
Yeah, with the wrestling, him showing her the wrestling moves and stuff. Yeah,
and her kept trying to like hit on Kurt, and it kept going over his head. So, I don't know. I think I was done with that part of it. Like, I think it would have been all right. Back to the well again, and they kind of put that to bed when Stephanie officially picked Triple H, and then she was Kurt's business manager, and they kind of ended it there. I think it would have been a little bit much to go back. Because if you look at it, and I know Scott and I kind of debated this, and we ebbed towards the way of, yes, Kurt was actually legitimately interested in her. But there's a little part of me that still likes to think part of that angle was him just fucking with Triple H the whole time and playing mind games. And I feel like going back to it, like, Kurt had surpassed that portion of the mind games. Like, he was on to something else now. Maybe I'm reading way too much into the angle, but I always kind of felt like there was more to it than just Kurt had a crush on Stephanie. I always felt like the way he was always a little bit sly about it always made me feel like he was doing it just to mess with Triple H.
It's entirely possible.
And he was kind of a devious guy, too. There's always something dishonest about Kurt through all his honesty.
Exactly. And that's what made him such a good character.
Yeah, of course.
Now, of course, the Austin and Triple H stuff does not end on this evening. We'll talk more about that in our next match. But yes, this goes back to January 8th when Triple H cost Austin the match at.
And that was a hot match. That match. And
that was a good match. Yes,
that was a lot of mad. That was, to me, that was Austin's like first match where he was like Austin again. It felt like where he, I mean the hell in a cell kind of, but that was just a different brawl. To me, his match with Angle was kind of like, all right, here's the Austin we all knew, going out there and kind of tearing it up with a great wrestler.
Yeah. No, I agree, and. And Kurt just kind of rolls over onto Triple H after the stunner and retains once again his World Wrestling Federation Championship.
Did you think he was going to make it to Mania at this point? As champ?
Thought it all depended who won the Rumble. I was a little unsure at this point. It wouldn't have surprised me, but it depended who the feud was going to be with. I guess it all depended on who won the Rumble and what else the card was going to be. I mean, because it seems so wide open at this point with, like, it felt like, I finally felt like the roster was really filling out. So I felt very happily unsure because I knew there was so much talent now, and we'll get more into this in our next two shows, that I felt like finally everybody was healthy at the same time. And it really made this very special.
I agree. It's really the first time since, man, I guess you could maybe say SummerSlam 99, but even then Austin was a little hurting. I'd say SummerSlam 99. It's probably the last time we had the full complement of characters kind of.
Yeah, but they were all, but at some point they were all kind of banged up. Taker was banged up and Mick was, you know, in the friggin' powder blue sweatpants. And
true.
Nobody was at their best. I feel like everybody, and remember 99, the mid card was.
I'll say even 15 then maybe. Maybe 15 is the last time we had them 15. All.
Yeah, yeah. And of course now the mid card is 10 times better than it was in 99. So, but answer your question, and I'm curious, obviously Aaron, your thoughts too. I wasn't sure if he was going to make it to Mania. Part of me said no, but I think it all depended at this point on what was going to happen at No Way Out and who won the Rumble. So I was still a little up in the air, but he would have earned it. I'll say that he definitely would have earned it. What do you think, Aaron?
I think I want to say no. But I think that's very easy in hindsight. But I will say this, that like the writing was so good at that point with the way they structured the storylines that like it could it's the first time in a long time where it could go anyway. You know, like it's like you could have Rock challenging for the title at WrestleMania. You could have Triple H challenging for the title. You could have Angle carry it the whole way. You could have him lose it. You know, and everyone would easily match up with someone else. It's not like in past years where it's like, okay, if Shawn Michaels doesn't win the Rumble, is the British Bulldog going to fight Diesel?
Right. You know? Yeah, exactly. You know?
So I don't know. From that perspective, like it did have a good air of mystery, quote unquote. But yeah, the writing was just strong.
Ugh, and after what we could have, and after what would have happened at In Your House, what, 3? Dude, we've wanted to see Diesel Bulldog at WrestleMania.
Again, oh, God. And again, and again.
If that match didn't happen. but Kurt Angle retains his championship. What about you, JR? Did you think he was going to win it?
No, but I don't think it would have been a surprise if he did. I didn't feel like he would because I didn't really see the set feud. I mean, I just couldn't see Rock with the guys you have in the mix right now with Triple H around, Austin, Taker, Rock. I just couldn't see Rock Kurt for the title at Mania. It just didn't feel like a Mania match to me at that point.
Go on.
I was going to say, neither did Austin and Kurt, because they didn't really have a lot of heat behind them either. So I figured something was up. I thought maybe Triple H was going to win the title here. I was actually pretty surprised at the time when he didn't, because I thought for sure we were setting up for Austin Triple H at Mania. So I think with Kurt win, it was kind of like an oop-de-oop. Even though I think a lot of the kind of rumors at the time were pointing towards what we would eventually get, it didn't feel like that in the booking at this point. It was hard to see where they were headed with that.
Yeah, and I was just going to say what basically you answered was like could you not see Austin Triple H? And so like – and because that's what I could have seen. I could have seen their feud extending to WrestleMania.
To me, that if I had to put money down heading in or out of this show, I will say into the show, it would have been Austin wins the Rumble, Triple H wins the title. Like to me, that's exactly where it seemed to be heading. So I would say it was a little bit of a surprise.
Mm. Yeah, and that culminates the big storyline from – one of the big storylines from last year too.
Yes.
The running down.
So there we are. Kurt Angle. Your boy escapes again, JR. And still World Wrestling Federation champion. All right. Aaron, superb job so far. But now you have to do the entire rest of the show in French.
Call this the tabarnak de mousse.
But the problem is you have to dress like Frenchie Martin to do so.
Dude, I'm already dressed like that, so don't stress.
Oh! JR,
so is your Frenchie costume under the cane?
Yeah, I've got like 8 costumes on.
A monocle with a mask on?
I'm so hot. Like, the sweat is pouring off me.
All right, we're going to take a break so he can put his Frenchie Martin stuff on and wear his Mountie outfit. You have like the Frenchie Martin coat, the Mountie boots.
The gobbledygooker suit over everything.
The gobbledygooker was French? A French turkey.
What's surprising, guys?
Turquoise?
It's danged.
All right. We are going to take a breather so we can all
Sylvester Turquay.
Sylvester Turquay. And when we come back, the match, of course, we're all waiting for. Who will face Kurt Angle, if that's to stay the way it is, April 1st in Houston. First, though, a word. Bequaz.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it!
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get you all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. If you want nonstop old school NWA discussion, getting back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu. And there they are, the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to the return of the hack, you've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts, of course, besides Chad and Parr. We have Grapple Talk, the fans podcast, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and the Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, check out the news and the great forums at twfnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, attitude era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. So check out all there is to see right on twfnews.com.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Killing me.
One time.
I think my favorite president goes, yeah. Welcome back. You know what's sad? When you probably first heard that, you probably had no idea that it was a cover.
I did too. You know how much fucking B101 I listened to growing up? My dad is nonstop. I knew every oldies fucking song. He had this like tape thing that he ordered off TV that was like 60 like solid gold oldies tapes, and that was like the only music we had available in our house for a long time. So
tremendous. All right, Papa Gazzo.
I heard plenty of 60s Motown and soul and rock 70s. And roll and everything else in 70s. Nice. So,
all right.
PlaceHumanation.com, your home for your pop culture needs, Scott. We had a big week leading into Bound for Glory last night. Great piece by Andrew Riesch looking at TNA. Is it second rate or second best? A big podcast we had, not ours, but Mark Clare, mm-hmm. of course, works for the Lions of Liberty website. Big libertarians over there. And one of the biggest libertarian wrestlers, Glenn Jacobs, otherwise known as Kane. And Mark Clare interviewed him. It's about an hour. Talks about his political stuff, his some wrestling stuff in there. Did some fan questions. It was really cool. It was a good interview. Mm-hmm. And for people like me, maybe not as up on the libertarian platforms, even though I did once participate in a Lyndon LaRouche conference call, Glenn and Mark did an awesome job kind of laying out the whole platform and the ideas behind it and all the different economics behind it. And I thought it was a really well-done interview. So that's up on our site as well, kind of simulcasted over from their site. Also, podcast Goodwill Wrestling was back with the best AWA matches of the 1980s. Sounds like a good snooze fest there. only kidding, of course. Grapple Talk podcast from October 17th, Callum Leslie interviewed Chad Campbell and also Roy Nelson from the UFC. So that was a big get for Callum. Cool interview there. So if you're into UFC or MMA and you want to hear Roy Nelson and Callum chat, you can check that out. We had all our complement of reviews, Your Impact, Steve Willey's Main Event, Matt Petticord's SmackDown. Roger Morissette attended a Pearl Jam concert last Tuesday in Worcester.
Oh.
And of course, it happened to be the same day that the new album dropped. And mm-hmm. so he talks about not only the concert, but kind of the parallel of Pearl Jam to his life. And kind of how they've always popped up in important moments over his past 33 years or so. So a pretty cool little brief read there if you want to check it out from Roger. More mm-hmm. Bound for Glory stuff, of course. You did a full preview. We did a five count of TNA's top rivalries led by Ben Morris there with the usual staff cast.
Mm-hmm.
Answering the 10 count had a new episode. UFC live blog, Roger and Callum did that. UFC 166, which happened Saturday night. And also the Bound for Glory live blog, you and Steve Willey, Scott. Mm-hmm. Did a great job with that one, of course, covering that live. And you guys can go back and reread that if you want to kind of mm-hmm. catch up on what happened on that show. New episodes of Titans of Wrestling, looking at December 1979, and the Kings of Sport with Nate Milton, of course, were back as well. Today we had Ring of Honor. My recap was up. Jeremy Nichols looked at Halloween 2 from 1981. Mm-hmm. The Hard Traveling Fanboys are back with the Lawn Book Hunters edition, Ultimate Spider-Man Volume 1, Part 1, and, of course, Chad Campbell's Vintage Vault previewing, setting up our show here tonight. PlaceHumanation.com, of course, your one stop. Keep checking it out. We have tons of podcasts, tons of written pieces for you to enjoy. Now, Scott, speaking of podcasts, I made a rare appearance on another podcast out there.
You did.
And that was the Sunday Segway Wrestling Guys mm-hmm. over in England. Mm-hmm. Big fans of the show and the site. They were generous enough to invite me onto the show. Had an awesome time chatting with them. We talked about kind of my history as a wrestling fan, some of my favorites. And, of course, talked a lot about PlaceToBeNation.com and good. The PlaceToBeNation family.
Excellent.
Went over our trip to Mania weekend and everything else. Had a really cool time with them. So nice. That is going to be airing this Sunday. And you can find them on YouTube by just searching Sunday Segway Wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I'll also, of course, we'll pimp that on the Facebook page as well once it's up live. So mm-hmm. be sure to check that out. Of course, Sunday Segway Wrestling. Each and every Sunday they talk about the goings-on in the current world of wrestling, and they also mix in some older stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And I will be on Sunday there. And speaking of podcast appearances, Scott, I'm a busy man because Friday night, Chad Campbell and myself will be on the Saturday Morning Spectacular. We're recording it Friday. It'll air Saturday. And we'll be on with Jeff Jehelka. Mm-hmm. Steve Rogers, and we'll be talking about the 1996 World Series between the Yankees and the Braves.
Oh, boy.
So we have about 17 pages of notes from Jeff that we're going to go through, and should be a good time. I don't get to talk a lot of baseball in depth often, so me and Chadley will be on that show breaking down the 96 World Series with, of course, Jeff. And you can find him at the Saturday Morning Spectacular on Facebook. Of course, he does a great job with that show, too. So looking forward to that.
Yep.
That's it. We can go back.
All right. Good.
And we're back.
And we're back.
God, you can't fucking cover for me. It's two of you.
And now, well, I was waiting for Aaron to do the entire Place to Be Nation commercial in French.
Don't lay this on Aaron. It's not his fault.
Et on est de retour. C'est l'espace à être.
And now you're just doing Glass Joe.
It sounds. Hey, don't diss Glass Joe. Okay, we have a statue of him on Mount Royal.
All right, we are back in New Orleans for the 2000. Well, it's kind of ironic. I just realized it's very coincidental that Aaron, a fluent French speaker, and we were in the French Quarter. So let's go back to the French
Attaboy
Quarter.
Attaboy with your coincidental. You got it right for once.
Yeah, I know. I just like the word ironic. We are now going to head to the non sequitur portion of the show. Royal Rumble time. Who will be the number one contender going into April 1st in Houston? As General Zod said, the planet Houston. Royal Rumble. Pretty wide open for the first time in a while, JR and Aaron. I feel like.
Open like really a 7-Eleven.
Didn't totally know who was going to win this. There was no. And I think that's why Kurt kept the title. I almost feel like if Triple H had won it, it almost would have seemed like a foregone conclusion that it would have been either, could have been either Rock or Stone Cold because both.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Both had feuds with Triple H. I don't know if we would have had Triple H Rock at Mania again. So, all right.
And I like this Rumble too, as we'll see, because it's one of the ones where they kind of stagger. You get a lot of kind of fluff early with a couple of big names, and then they kind of bring a few of the heavy hitters in late. So I kind of like those kind of setups instead of having some big guns in early. I kind of like the slow build to it.
Yeah, and I find too they do the thing that I think really helps Royal Rumbles, in that like at every moment in the Rumble there is either a heel you want to see thrown out or a hot face,
right?
Like without exception throughout.
All right, at number one. If one half of one of the hottest tag teams in the company at the time, Jeff Hardy. Kind of like Axe in 1989. One of the two that started the 1989 Rumble. At number two,
Mr. Great Bill Buchanan.
That's right.
I was so excited. I had to get it out before you did. Of course, a big member of the RTC. Mm-hmm. And as JR pointed out, no necktie tonight. So you know he means business.
Yes.
And the RTC's music is the most annoying thing I've ever heard in my life, I think.
It's I swear, every time I always thought there was a smoke alarm going off in my house. I had to get up to make sure.
Yeah, and that made me madder and hate the characters more.
And it's funny because I never really noticed at the time the beat underneath it, but I kind of hear it now with kind of better audio quality. And if I'm listening with headphones in at work or something, that kind of dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's kind of underneath the sirens. But
yeah. I didn't notice it until this show.
Really?
I always felt like it was very much more subtle during 2000.
You're right. It may be a little bit subtle.
Yeah.
Oh, the sound, not the music.
Yes, not the music. No.
The music itself, the underlying music, not the siren, for God's sake.
Yeah, boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Okay. At number three, the other half of one of the hotter tag teams we saw, he came in earlier, Jeff Hardy's brother, Matt. At number three.
And they're forced to go at it.
Yes, they are.
Did you guys ever play the Nintendo 64 No Mercy game?
Yep.
I find the shot of them running to the Royal Rumble in that game is identical to the camera shot they use for every entrance on this one. It's like the wide shot with the guy running.
It's pretty funny. It's like, well, they all were pretty big into the video games at this point, right? So yeah, they just started to ape it all.
Probably.
At the time, my favorite was Attitude. For PS, I guess it would be PS1. That was my favorite wrestling game at that point, 2000, 2001. At number four, one half of another great tag team, one half of the APA, Farouk.
Farouk Assad.
And what was Farouk saying?
Damn.
Yeah, no more, please. More. Damn.
Please, no.
JR, you can tell everyone who came in at number five.
My man, the one and only, Mr. Drew Carey. Very excited. Comes out in his little fucking sweatsuit, windbreaker suit. And everyone kind of topples out and eliminates themselves. Matt and Jeff eliminate each other. The ring is empty, and Drew's standing alone. Kind of smirking, thinking, hey, this shit's pretty easy.
I'm all by myself.
Why do you think they put him in the Hall of Fame?
That's right.
Cleared the ring.
Living in the Hall of Fame all by myself.
Until number six.
That's gotta be Kane!
Yep. And what would begin an epic, epic evening for the big red libertarian.
And a guy that had really been really well built back up in December after kind of, you know, with the coffee feud and everything else, since Armageddon had really been built back into a monster, had beaten The Rock clean, and that was a big win for him, and really kind of reestablished as a player coming into the Rumble. Like a guy that you could maybe see as a dark horse to win this.
Entirely possible. Red hot. Put him in a good spot, too.
And of course, go ahead, Aaron.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I was surprised to see him come out this early.
Yeah, me too. Usually a big guy doesn't come in this early unless he's going to go out due to some shenanigans. So I figured maybe something was afoot at this point. But, of course, Drew tries to pay Kane off with some money, and that doesn't work, and he just eliminates himself and runs away. So
I think Kane should get credit that for scaring him out of the ring.
Yeah, right?
It should be 12. It should be that should be the part of the record.
And he obviously grabs him by the throat first, and then the next guy enters, and Drew just scampers off and ends his little cameo, which I thought was a successful one. I thought he did a good job overall.
Yes.
Yeah, that whole segment was pretty brilliant.
Yep.
Like the look on they couldn't have picked a better guy to come out with Drew Carey.
No, definitely not. And it kind of played off the whole like Kane and Pete Rose thing. He was kind of like the celebrity killer.
Yes. Okay. At number seven is a guy who made his debut a few months earlier to WWE.
From the Bowery.
From the Bowery, and that is, of course, Raven, a.k.a. Johnny Polo. At number eight.
And Raven, by the way, was your hardcore champion. He had defeated Steve Blackman.
You okay? Are you going to be all right?
I had a hard time with it, but I liked Raven too. And the hardcore division had gone on kind of a renaissance over the last couple, 6 weeks or so of 2000.
This is the first time anyone has used the word renaissance describing the hardcore division.
Renaissance.
It definitely was under a renaissance with Raven in the mix and Blackman still kind of going. Blackman had a really good 2000.
Should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Living in the Hall of Fame by myself.
At number eight, another guy who will never belong in the Hall of Fame, nor he'll always be by himself, Mr. Al Snow.
Oh, poor Al.
Poor Al. Decent good shit kicking by Raven in this stretch here.
Well, yeah, there's a couple more guys let's get to, and then we'll talk about the segment that happens there.
Yes. At number nine, one quarter of the Radicals, Perry Saturn, who now had the frosted walrus tusks as part of his mustache.
He still had
Terry with him.
I felt it was a Kane versus ECW.
Yes, that's exactly
taking on the whole promotion.
Just taking out a faction, yes.
Raven, Snow, Saturn.
And I forgot something that I loved about Drew. I forgot to mention it, but Drew Carey, as he leaves, like with Raven in the ring, he encourages Raven. He shouts out like a "get him," which I think is just gold.
I like JR when Saturn Terry come out. JR goes, "Oh, what's Terry not wearing tonight?" It's very funny. At number 10 is, I guess now, former there he is now, former World Wrestling Federation Hulk. Le Blackman. Steve Le Blackman. Steve Black.
You would be referring to L'Homme Noir.
You know what's sad, though, here, fellas? Hang on a second, because we need to eulogize.
Oh, should have had that on his tights.
The final pay-per-view appearance for our friend Steve Blackman.
Oh, no.
He actually stuck around through June. Mm-hmm. And even appeared in February, interfering in a hardcore title match, but did not compete on pay-per-view again. Most of his time was spent teaming up with Grandmaster Sexay after Scotty Tuhati would suffer an ankle injury. The gimmick here was Sexay would try and convince Blackman to dance with them after the matches. The team was short-lived, and Blackman was taken off TV in June after suffering from neck problems. He was on the sidelines until his contract expired in October of 2002.
Jesus.
And has not renewed So Blackman currently owns Steve Blackman's Fighting Systems, which features MMA classes as well as professional wrestling training with CCW, a local independent promotion in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Blackman appeared, of course, at Raw's 15th anniversary show back in 2007. And his final all-time record, Aaron, any guesses? 18 matches.
8 and 10?
Close. 6 and 12. Going 0-4 at the Rumble, 0-2 at Mania, 1-1 at SummerSlam, 2-1 at Survivor Series, and 3-4 at other events. Sad end.
Can we have the Rob Houston Memorial, Steve Blackman, indie show update?
May have to.
You're just trying to get out of it, aren't you, Scott?
Yeah. Yes. All right. At number 11 is the aforementioned guy that teamed with Steve Blackman, and that is one half of Too Cool, Grandmaster Sexay.
And Scott, this is also Brian Christopher's final pay-per-view appearance.
Although he left for very different reasons.
Yes, he teamed with Steve Blackman when Scotty went down, as we mentioned. Stuck around till late May, but he was caught at the Canadian border with drugs.
We got him.
Aaron George was waiting for him. Had drugs in his car and was released shortly after. Made appearances for WWAS, World Wrestling All-Stars, and TNA. He was brought back for a brief run in 2004. And a little fun little tidbit, he was Jim Ross's final hire as talent scout. He only wrestled 4 matches and was released back for the promotion. He still wrestles to this day out on the indies. His final pay-per-view record, Mr. Aaron George, in 15 matches.
Oh, God, I'll go lower. I'll go 4 and 11.
Now you missed by 2 the other way. It was 6 and 9.
Jesus.
0-2 at the Rumble, 1-1 at WrestleMania, 1-1 at King of the Ring, 0-1 at SummerSlam, 1-0 at Survivor Series, and 3-4 at other events.
I can't believe he did so well. It makes no sense.
Well,
so
he got hot a little bit. It's Too Cool, I guess, right?
And he did beat Head and Shoulders, so.
That's right. That was a big win.
That's right, yes. So what happened? He was sitting in his car, and you and, you know, the Rougeau family were on horses.
The Mountie and I. He screamed, "I am the Mountie," and Brian Christopher got right out of his car because he knew.
Scott's being incredibly racist throughout this entire show. It's good stuff.
Towards French Canadians.
Right? It's a little much.
Yeah.
It's a little much. You ride horse, they wear.
No, you keep like giving this gibberish speak every time you fucking even mention them.
You know, we're a civilized language, Scott, okay?
What would you have said on horseback then, Aaron? I don't even know what that means.
He says, "Come here, you fucker. I'm going to put you on my horse."
What's his name? Taught me French.
We busted him. All right, busted him. Okay, that's it.
And he's gone. And I think the last time we saw him on TV was, I guess it would be 2011 during the.
I made a brief return.
Lawler Cole feud going to WrestleMania 27.
Nobody knew who he was in the crowd. I know. It was so sad.
It was really sad. But as we see a lot of departures, JR, we have a very sentimental return at number 12.
Yes, we usually get our little secret special surprises.
And a family member back-to-back to boot.
That's right, good call. The cousin of the Jerry Lawler family, and that is the Honky Tonk Man, makes his first appearance since late 1997, when Rockabilly turned his back on him to join up with the Road Dogg. Just a one-and-done deal for Honky, just a one-night surprise. A pretty cool one, though.
Yes. Yep. He tries to sing. Kane grabs his guitar, crushes him in the head, and chucks him.
And the song stops exactly on cue when the guitar smashes his head, which I think is a brilliant touch.
Yes.
Like Kane just shuts him right down.
Yeah. At number 13, probably one of
just
the favorites.
Quickly, Scott, one thing we didn't mention before.
Yes.
That I meant to. When we had all those guys in, Saturn, Snow, Blackman, Raven, Kane, they did a big hardcore segment with all weapons in the ring and everything else. So it's kind of almost like, I would say brought closure to the hardcore division because it wasn't done yet, but almost kind of wrapped that era of the hardcore division. Kind of all these guys that had been fighting for the title now brawling in the Rumble with all these weapons.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they threw in the wrong garbage can? Well, there's like tons of garbage in the ring, too.
they very may well have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that garbage can didn't look like it was one of those play garbage cans either, because Kane's head goes into it a few times. And it doesn't really move much. Like an outside, you know, driveway garbage can.
Yeah, and he laid there for like 45 minutes after. It was weird.
Yeah. At number 13 is obviously one of the...
Huh.
Hey, PTB Nation. It is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
Guys, this is Mark Clare here with the Vincent Kennedy McMahon health update. Now, as you guys know, as you guys all heard last week, we had a little incident. You know, Vince had some bad drugs, some bad coke. We did our normal partying. I don't know what could have gone wrong. We're doing some investigating, but Vince isn't doing too well. You know, he hasn't spoken in a week, and frankly, I mean, it's been tough for me because you don't really realize. Sorry, I just need a second. You don't really realize how much someone means to you until they're gone. And Vince isn't gone yet. He's hanging tough. And luckily, Vince, every single day of his life, if you can believe that, recorded an audio diary. And he asked that I come on his behalf if anything were to happen to him, which sadly it has. If he was unable to appear on the show and to play one of these entries for you. So in the spirit of the Place to Be podcast, in the spirit of the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update, I'm going to hit my play on my little machine here, my karaoke machine. Vince insisted that I use that. And I'm going to play you a message from VKM himself. Here we go.
Ah, is this on? All right, thanks. If you're listening to this, I've been unable to perform due to being in a coma. Also, depending on the year you're hearing this, I also have no issue admitting I was behind the death and or impregnation of the following people. I will leave it to you, the listeners, to determine which was which. Big John Studd, Lou Albano, Davey Boy Smith, Marty Jannetty, Bushwhacker Butch, Leilani Kai, Matt Rotella, Jesse Ventura, Kurt Hennig, Ted Turner, Jane Fonda, Lanny Poffo, Angelo Poffo, Sable, Vern Gagne, Greg Gagne, Mr. T, Stephanie Wyand, Shep Ramsey, Dixie Carter, Parv, Jim Ross, the Panda Bear from the WWF logo, Bruce Hart, Bull Nakano, Berserker, Kevin Kelly, Kelly Kelly, Psycho Sid, Michael Cole, and King Kong Bundy. The last few days have been weird. I've been feeling weird. I noticed a lot of shifty characters at the Thirsty Turtle the other night, and Armento kept dipping out the back door. I might have to get rid of him soon. I can't trust him anymore. I can't wait for the XFL games this weekend. The Demons battling the Maniacs in a game that's huge for playoff implications. But I need Ventura out of the booth. Someday I'll get my revenge on him. I have no doubt about that. Nobody sues me for an appearance on Wham Bam Body Slam. Speaking of Bam, I wonder how Bam Bam Bigelow's doing. He used to have the best cookouts.
What's that? What do you mean he died 7 years ago? Bam Bam Bigelow? The guy with the tattoos on his head? And the underwear? Where's the underwear over his pants? That guy, he died?
Fuck, where the hell have I been? Damn it, his performance at King of the Ring 94 is always one of my favorites. Wham Bam Body Slam, what a hell of a VHS tape that was. Lex Luger versus Tatanka. Doink and Dink on the run through the studios. Bushwhackers versus Well Done. Todd Pettengill's video game tips. I wonder what happened to Pettengill. And his video game tips. And his frosted tips. I was just thinking of taking that house back from Matt Papacelli the other day. I was hoping Todd would come with me to make the big announcement. Then again, he was always pissed at me for boning Stephanie Wyand on the Mania set that time. That shit got ugly fast. Too bad Peggy will never realize I took the money for the abortion out of his paycheck. Fucking nerd. Speaking of abortions, Claire's been driving me nuts lately. Keeps playing this Bob Dabalina song. It's been stuck in my head for days now. Can't get it out. Last night I couldn't fall asleep. The song just kept playing over and over in my head. I even tried counting hillbillies. It wouldn't work. Maybe I'll try counting them again. Hillbilly Jim. Uncle Elmer. Cousin Junior. Phineas Godwin. Henry Godwin. Plowboy Frazier. Haystacks Calhoun. Uncle Cletus. Ted Turner. Ah! Oh, work that time. That doesn't help me. Now I got plans today. I need to take the pussy posse down to the water park. I'm not really up to it, but I promised Rutella we could go rafting down the lazy river and drinking Mick Ultras. Oh, well. I better go get my swim trunks on and head out of here. Thanks for listening, Diary. Love, Vincent Kennedy McMahon Jr. Suck it, bitch. Pussy posse for life. Well, Scott, I need to tell you right now, I received a huge box of these things in the mail. It came in an unmarked package from Mark Claire. There's dates all over the place on these fucking things. And I've been told by Vince's attorneys with our contract to him, since he's obligated to be on the show, we're going to be playing these tapes from all throughout history of Vince's life week after week on the show here until he's out of the coma.
I knew it was going to catch up to him. But I just have one question. What do you think he and Parv's love child looks like?
So you're assuming he impregnated Parv. That's an interesting take.
Mm. Wow. I'm a little upset. Figures Armento would slide out the back door. Yeah, it'd be like him.
He's usually sliding in the back door.
Yeah. Couldn't leave anything to the imagination, could you? All right.
Never.
All right, VKM.
I hope he's going to be okay. I mean, because that's bad.
Yeah,
that's bad.
Get well, our Svengali.
Yeah. I love how we all went to the deep JR voices, too. It's good.
Yes, we did. Well, this is much more serious than China.
We're such hypocrites. We go right back. We go right to it.
China's fake whiplash. So
we just want to tell you this is not part of the show. Yes. We had this thing planned.
You know, we're all sports entertainment.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Part two next week. From Las Vegas. All right. At number 13, one of the prohibitive favorites in this Royal Rumble, and that is, I can't say it in Vince's voice, The Rock, who, of course, lost the title at No Mercy and has been chasing it ever since. Good spot for him. Weird spot, because no one, you know, JR, you and I always talk about numbers and percentages and things, and only one, I think, wrestler to this point had ever won in the teens.
How was that, Sean?
Sean in 96, right? Didn't he come in? I think he came in at 17 or 18.
Hogan didn't win one from the teens?
No, I think he was in the 20s both times. Okay. Have to look back. I know 91 he came in at like...
Yeah, 91 was late. I thought 90 he was... Oh, maybe not.
Maybe he came in, yeah, because he came in after Warrior, so...
It was 25 and 26 Hogan, or 25 and 24, I think, Hogan's entrance is.
Okay, so Sean's the only teens to this point.
But
teens.
Scott, I think you've blocked out Mr. Duggan coming in from the teens and winning.
There you go.
Yeah. A, there were only 20 guys, and B, no one gives a shit. C, no one gives a shit. And D, well, I don't have to give you D. And D, Parv. Right. All right. Okay, so The Rock's in at 13, and he gets a pretty good run here. At number 14, JR runs out the back door of his house thinking it's on fire because we get the good father
yes.
from Right to Censor.
Heavy RTC presence.
Yes.
I think every Rumble has a faction or unit that like kind of dominates things. So we have the RTC in this one.
Yes.
Only they don't dominate in
right,
any way.
They do nothing.
No, they dominate just standing.
They do absolutely yes. zero. But.
At number 15, we actually get a pretty good pop from the New Orleans crowd when his music plays, even though he had probably zero chance of winning, and that was Taz.
Yeah, he's more doing more as a commentator now. Yeah. Here and there, still wrestling on TV. Mm-hmm. Had a hardcore match at Raven, but really doing more of the announcing and commentary at this point.
And right. this moment is the writing on the wall for him.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Like...
It's going to last like 17 seconds or whatever.
Yeah. If that.
Yeah, he runs in like full speed and just kind of flows up.
10 seconds. Yeah. Well, Kane pushes him off the top, right?
Yeah. He just picks him up like seconds. He's nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. We have 5 seconds on the written review. I think he like runs in and 10. Like, zips out.
Yeah.
All right. Halfway through, Aaron, what were your thoughts?
It's good. It's a good Rumble. Like, there's enough fun spots. There's enough intrigue so far. And I like that there's big guys in already.
Hmm. What were you thinking, JR, in terms of a favorite? I mean, obviously still a few favorites left, but at this point, do you think Rock had a chance this early?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that never really – I never really paid attention unless a guy was like 6. Well, even that, I mean, Austin won at 5. I think we're past the point where it matters where they enter, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right.
And someone always lasts, too. Right. Someone always lasts to the end anyway, right? So.
Yep.
At number 16, the other half of the APA, of course, Frew came in at 4. Bradshaw comes in at 16. So we got some beef in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
At number 17, we get some more beef. And that is the first half of TNA, and that is Albert.
Well, no longer TNA.
No.
They had actually split up because they were arguing over whether or not they should trust Stephanie. Mm-hmm. Of course, Albert was kind of becoming more of a corporate goon, and Tess didn't really like it. He was still kind of staying loyal to Trish a little bit. Mm-hmm. They were having their arguments, and Albert would eventually turn on Tess, and so did Trish. So Tess was a face now, and Albert kind of a heel, low-level lackey for Vince and Stephanie. But so that unit's done. I thought they had a good run, just under a year. I thought it really kind of established them both as players again, and I liked the team. I thought it was done. I could see why they ended it. I don't think they needed to go on any longer. But I liked the year they had together.
Yes.
When you said low lackey, all I could think of was the Brooklyn Brawler in the Heenan family.
Yes. Yeah, I think he's probably about on par with that.
Yeah.
I like how JR's like, here comes Albert, another young stud. That's the way he said
it. Leon Hals.
And number 18, a guy who quickly fell off the popularity map after losing to William Regal, and that is Hardcore Holly.
Mm. I don't like me now.
At number 19, time to get a little rowdy. Although he no longer has his father figure.
His father gotta figure. Move some things. He this is actually his final appearance here for a while.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
His record finishes at 0-2, moved on to the fledgling NWA TNA in 2002, and he would be released quietly at the end of the summer. So not much of an impact here for K Quick. Kind of surprising, because if you remember, Kevin last week was saying that they were pretty high on him coming out of Memphis, coming up out of the developmental territory. So Road Dogg, his former friend and weird-ass creepy guy, had actually been released in January due to drug issues. He was just having a lot of problems throughout the end of the year, and finally was just kind of quiet release as well. They didn't really even mention it on TV. So that short-lived team looking to establish K-Quick as a star, both men now gone by mid-January. Well,
yes.
K-Quick gone for relevance, not gone yet. But
yeah, yeah. All right, at number 20, JR runs out of the back door again because Val Venus.
Rhymes with penis.
No, it doesn't.
As they yell from outside the house.
Yes. No, it doesn't.
In the backyard.
he comes out, so the final RTC member of the show.
Mm-hmm.
At number 21, as I mentioned a moment ago, your World Wrestling Federation European champion, the only guy who didn't have to defend his title tonight, and that is William Regal.
And Regal was getting quite the push, actually. He had been involved, and he had been mixing it up with Austin on TV a lot. He actually cost him a couple matches, and they were having a feud. Regal kind of working closely with Vince and Stephanie, too. Did you think Regal was in a good position here, Aaron, this early on?
Oh, yeah, I loved him. I loved that he used to come out and read Shakespeare to the audience. He used to – and he did – I love the character of his Goodwill ambassador killed me, like the smiling British man – who would kill you in the ring was pretty genius. And yeah, you could totally tell he was on the way up, and well, that's what happens, right?
Agreed.
Yes. All right. At number 22, as JR mentioned, the now babyface test, no longer TNA. And then at number 23.
I always used to joke when that CD came out with that song, that would make like a great alarm clock. Just, well! So one morning, Adam got up before me and queued it up. So when my alarm went off, he played it like really loud to wake me up, and it was pretty funny. I laughed.
Of course, he's returning from his. I'm trying to wake up Vince, making his return. After being at the the Kentucky Fat Farm for 5 months,
And I don't even know if he didn't look like he was in any better shape. I feel like they just brought him back just because they wanted to make it a surprise. Like, I don't think he was any. He wasn't ready, I don't think.
No.
He looked terrible, and his shirt was way too short.
Oh, yeah, you notice it? Yeah, and he's like, his guts hanging out, and it was very, very bad, yeah. But so he returns at number 23. And he actually has a big moment in this match because he actually chokeslams Rock, who's not, he wasn't eliminated, but he chokeslams Rock through the announce table and kind of knocks him out for a little while. At number 24 is the guy who said he was going to throw both members of APA out.
Yes.
And that was Crash Holly.
Kind of surprising he made the cut and not poor D'Lo Brown.
I know. Drew Carey took their spot. Why couldn't they take somebody else's? At number 25, and this is where we get a little bit of drama at the end, and that is our man, our favorite guy of 2000. Yeah. The Undertaker. Taker. And he and kind of Kane. You know what was really, I think, was really bothering me, and you really notice it here, with the whole goatee and the hair, and he just looked old. He looked old.
Get out my yard, kids.
That's Booger Red.
He was kind of like, like Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino. You know,
just yeah,
like
he's just
grizzled, pissed off old man. You know, but like the he didn't, you know, he wasn't dyeing his hair anymore or anything, so his hair was lighter, his goatee was lighter, and he just looked old.
Yeah,
and it was really weird, and him and Kane kind of glaring at each other, and you know what was going on with the two of them. And then at number 26, a great moment here, the other half of Too Cool before he injured his ankle, and that was Scotty Too Hotty.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this look like, I think I'm just gonna pull a Drew Carey and eliminate myself. And JR was telling him he should do that. So all right. Then at number 27, the other prohibitive favorite, and that is, of course, looking for his unprecedented third Royal Rumble championship, Royal Rumble win, and that was, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin at number 27. At number 28, at least we have a new song we can play yes. a lot of to replace the loss of the great Steve Blackman. Yes, the one Billy Gunn comes in at number 28. But then, the highlight of the show, or the highlight of this Rumble maybe, the guy comes in at number 29.
Haku!
Yeah.
Tremendous.
One of the great surprises. It was actually spoiled online. There were rumors that he may show up. And, of course, we last saw him 9 years ago in the 1992 Royal Rumble.
Another great Rumble.
Ventured south to WCW, was renamed Ming, brought in as Colonel Robert Parker's bodyguard, would eventually step into the ring and wrestle. He was consistently booked as a tough guy, picked up some impressive wins. In 1996, he joined forces with an old friend, the Barbarian, to become the Faces of Fear. They had a lot of success over the next 4 years, became internet favorites due to their solid TV matches and week in and week out. In late 2000, Ming won the hardcore title but was working without a contract. And after having been burnt so many times in 94 and 95, Vince fires one last shot over the bow at WCW and takes one of their champions. Being the class act that he is, Ming gives the hardcore title back to the Barbarian to return instead of taking it with him. And word leaked early that he was back, and many were surprised when he came out at 29. It was almost like one last middle finger to WCW. Like, fuck you for all those years of being assholes. I'm taking your champion, even though there's nothing you can do about it because you're dying. So, like,
yes.
It was just one last. Like, he didn't even need to do this. It was so stupid. Like, it was pointless. I mean, what was Haku really going to do? But it was pretty awesome. I like that they went back to the Haku name. They didn't go with Ming.
Yes.
He still had the big fro, though. So, and he'll have a decent little run in the next couple months and then quickly kind of dissipates. But
yeah,
for now, it's pretty cool to see him back in the mix. Mm.
Aaron, yeah, were you a big Faces of Fear guy?
I was a big Islanders guy.
So I'm
Faces of Fear. Like, in Canada, we didn't really get WCW to like 98. So, like, we missed a lot of that. But yeah, when he came out, it wasn't ruined for me. Like it was awesome. Like, I was very happy to see Haku back.
Mm.
And then he had the same, is it the Head Shrinkers music he came out to?
Yes, I believe it was. Yep.
It's like anyone from Samoa, just give them the generic.
Yes.
The generic palm tree pipe
music.
Yes. Yeah, I thought they missed the boat with a potential tag team with Haku in our next entry.
Well, they did team for a little bit.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they did. They do until February. I think they're on our next pay-per-view as a team.
Mm. Oh, man, I can't remember that at all.
And that is, of course, the guy who earned the right. I don't remember how.
He won a
Battle Royal or something, right?
No, it was a four-way match.
Four-way match. At number 30 is the boom, 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 bad man. Boom, boom, boom. Heel music, no heel tights. No. And that is, of course, Rikishi.
I thought it was a good reestablishment of him to put him back. You know, he's still in the main event mix. You put him at 30. And he actually gets to eliminate The Undertaker, which was pretty good for him, too, kind of getting some heat back from when Taker threw him off the top of the cell. So I thought that was neat.
Yeah, and it's a great little spot, too, where they're, like, exchanging headbutts.
Yes.
And The Undertaker keeps getting progressively more hurt to the head.
Now, at this point, Rock is still, like, half out of it on the outside. And then now, as Stone Cold is going up the ramp, I forgot to mention this a couple moments ago, he is jumped by Triple H as payback for what happened about an hour earlier in the title match, and he gets the shit beat out of him, and Triple H busts him open and throws him into the barricade and just pummels him in the face, and that feud is just raging right now. Raging. And Austin eventually scrapes himself back into the ring, blood all over his face, while Rock, and it was good psychology here by JR, because he was pretty much saying that, you know, the two alpha dog favorites, Rock and Stone Cold, were both in very precarious positions,
right,
in this match, while, you know, Kane and Taker were mowing through guys in the ring. So, but Undertaker would be eliminated, and the final four guys would be Stone Cold, The Rock, Kane, and Billy Gunn. Not exactly balanced, but maybe if there was a best theme music Royal Rumble, Billy Gunn may have a better chance.
But,
yes.
He still finished last of those four.
but instead he gets chucked, and then the last three, probably the three favorites.
Was that a pun?
At this point, Aaron.
I think it was.
At this point, Aaron, could Kane, did you have any possibility of Kane pulling off the upset?
No. No.
Let me make an argument here, though. You never would have thought it before, but the way they booked him in the match, You had to sit for a second and say, well, what if Rock and Austin eliminate each other? What if Triple H comes out and Kane? I feel like they put some doubt. I feel like they booked him, and this is credit to them. I feel like they booked him so well.
I agree.
In this match, that you could almost believe it. I mean, he eliminated 11 guys. It lasted 53 minutes, almost 54.
Yep.
I mean, it was an amazing performance for a guy his size.
Yeah, I remember watching it live, and we entertained it. Like, we're like, is Kane winning this? Is Kane going to win the Royal Rumble? And we would have never done that earlier.
And I showed it to my roommate, Terry, who was like a very fringe wrestling fan. Like, not even a fan. He would just watch sometimes with us. And I got this tape, and we watched it. And as we're watching it, I'm having him kind of guess every 8 or 10 guys, hey, who's going to win now? And he was with Kane the whole way. And he thought he was going to win. And, of course, we get our Warrior Hogan moment with Austin and Rock having the big showdown in the middle of the ring, and they brawl, and the crowd's just going fucking crazy. And you just assume that you're going to get Rock and Austin as the last two, right? I mean, that's just what you would think. Yeah. So when Kane tosses Rock, now you're really fucking thinking, wait a minute, what's going on?
Yeah.
Austin, Kane. But I think that was shrewd, because I think it made Kane look good, but it also allowed Austin to eliminate a clear heel to win the Rumble and not toss the Rock and risk splitting any pop.
Right. Yeah, it was great. It was a very smart move.
And Austin had really been portrayed as crazy leading into this. Like, he had just fucking lost his mind. He ran over William Regal with a car, and Deborah was pleading with him, and Lawler was, and it was just like, he was just like going crazy during this point, just looking for revenge on anyone and everyone, and just hating on everyone. Poured beer over Stephanie and stunned Vince, and just wreaking havoc. So he was just obsessed and psychotic about defeating Triple H and then getting his title back. So a good win here for him. His third overall Royal Rumble win, and would be his final one as well. Overall, as a Rumble, Aaron, what did you think? Where do you rank this one?
I think it's probably, up until this point, I think it's probably my second or third favorite. I'd put 92 and maybe 90 ahead of it.
Hmm.
And everything else, I think this one is probably up there for me. What about you guys?
I think that, again, another example of how great the roster was at this point, because this match is loaded. And it was booked. You could tell that Pat was around because he knew how to do this. He had the whole template down to a T. And JR's right. I think there was some legitimate possibility that maybe this was finally Kane's moment. Why couldn't it be? Why couldn't it be? It's the Attitude Era. Anything is possible. And, you know, don't forget, the year before we had Rock win, we had all this controversy or whatever. We're talking about the match as a standalone.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. It's not guaranteed, you know, the winner is going to make it to Mania.
Yeah.
It's as we showed in the last couple of years. Exactly.
Right.
Well, and that what you were telling us too about, like, that outsider perspective, it's so interesting because we're fans, right? So I don't want to say we know more, but you have your own expectations based on history, right?
Right.
Like someone who's watching it, like my wife actually watches them with me a lot. Like I'll ask her, and the things she comes up with are amazing. Like
right
at 92, she's like, "Is the old guy gonna win?" Like, you know, and I figure if I were to show her this one too, she would probably think Kane too. So. Yeah,
I think if as a standalone, I think he had a damn good chance, you know. So,
all right, Aaron. Let me ask you this now: was this to date, if not the best, one of the best undercards for Rumble?
Easily one of the best.
One of, yeah, for sure.
I don't think it passes the last year, 2000.
No. The title match alone,
right.
Like kind of puts it above. But yeah, no. It's certainly better than certainly better than like the 89s. And
it may be the second best one. I mean, it may be.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the undercards throughout the 90s were kind of shitty. So in a lot of cases. Yeah.
And even when they were good matchups, they ended up being kind of dreary matches. And I don't know if that's – maybe it's just because we're all anticipating the Rumble. So we're just like, get this done, you know? Mm. But yeah, no, probably second best. You're probably right.
Yeah. So there you have it. I mean, it's funny because I gave it, when you rank 5-star matches, and I mean, I have one, you know, here, I do in the Benoit Jericho, and then, of course, the year before with Hunter and Mick. Obviously, the Hunter Mick 5-star is better than this 5-star if you can, you know, pick some over the other. But that Benoit Jericho match, if you take away what happened later on down the line, is probably one of the most memorable undercard matches. In Rumble history.
Yep.
But sadly, you know, it's obviously sullied for different reasons. But is it better than the undercard in 2000?
No.
No. But it's close. I mean, the fact that they filled 4 title matches at least made the titles mean something on this undercard. I mean, it shows a lot.
Yeah, you know what sucked about this one, though, is we didn't have the old lady flash in the audience like we did the year before.
True. Saggy so, sandbags. Yeah, that's true.
So, of course, last year's was better.
Yeah. So, there you go. 2001 Royal Rumble. The road to WrestleMania, the road to Houston. Not Rob Houston's house. But the road to Houston begins. So, there we go. A- for me.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. Very good show. And like we said, part one of an awesome, awesome trilogy.
Trinity.
Yep.
All right, so that will wrap up our review of Royal Rumble 01. No feedback tonight, just a jam-packed show with 3 of us on and lots to talk about. So keep it coming, though. We appreciate it. We do read it, and we'll keep it going into the next show. So, Scott, we'll be back Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
Got some headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Going to preview Hell in a Cell.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to review Bound for Glory.
Yes.
And we're going to have a couple guests, Greg Phillips.
Yes.
From PlaceMania.com, and the one and only Mr. Nate Milton making his debut.
That's right.
Of course, on the Kings of Sport podcast. You've heard him on Review and Impact as well with John Pollock and Wei Ting. So we look forward to that. And then next week, just one show will be our Halloween Spooktacular 2013. So
yes.
A couple things in the works for that. So, Mr. Aaron George, thank you so much for joining us. Had a great time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Indeed, sir. So for Scott and Aaron, I am Justin. Have a great couple nights. We'll talk to you Wednesday night with some headlines. That's it? You guys were cracking jokes left and right, now you got nothing?
I don't want to have to do the... Pr- prototypical heel sexist French spirit. Prejudice French speak.
Hey, look, when I get my Dino Bravo costume on, I will come and sidewalk slam you into next week.
Ready Rock got some girl I've never seen in my life. That was alright though, cause the lady was chill. Then we dipped to the theater, set to ill, buggin', Cole having a ball. And something about Elm Street was the movie we saw. The way it started was decent, you know, nothing real fancy about this homeboy named Fred and this girl named Nancy. But word, when it was over, I said, yo, that was death. And everything seemed alright when we left. But when I got home and laid down to sleep, that began the nightmare on my street. It was burning in my room like an oven. My bed soaked with sweat, and man, I was bugging. I checked the clock, and it stopped at 12:30. It had melted, it was so darn hot, and I was thirsty. I wanted something cool to quench my thirst. I thought to myself, yo, this heat is the worst. But when I got downstairs, I noticed something was wrong. I was home all alone, but the TV was on. I thought nothing of it as I grabbed the remote. I pushed the power button, and then I almost choked when I heard this awful voice coming from behind. It said, man, I ain't even wait to see who it was. Broke outside my drawers, the screamed so long, cuz got halfway up the block, I calmed down and stopped screaming, then thought, oh, I get it, I must be dreaming. I strolled back home with a grin on my grill. I figured since this is a dream, I might as well get ill. I walked in the house, the big bad fresh prince. But Freddy killed all that noise real quick. He grabbed me by my neck and said,
here's what we'll do. We got a lot of work here, me and you. The souls of your friends, you and I will claim.
I said, yo, Fred, I think you got me all wrong. I ain't partners with nobody with nails that long. Look, I'll be honest, man, this team won't work. The girls won't be on you, Fred, your face is all burnt. Fred got mad and his head started steaming. But I thought, what the hell, I'm only dreaming. I said, please leave, Fred, so I can get some sleep. But give me a call, and maybe we'll hang out next week. I pat him on the shoulder, said, thanks for stopping by. Then I opened up the door and said, take care, guy. He got mad, drew back his arm, and slashed my shirt. I laughed at first and thought, hold up, that hurt. It wasn't a dream, man, this guy was for real. I said, Freddy, how's been an awful mistake here. No further words, and then I darted upstairs. Crashed through my door, then jumped on my bed. Pulled the covers up over my head, said, oh, please do something with Fred. He jumped on my bed, but through the covers with his claws, tried to get me. But my alarm went off, and then silence. It was a whole new day, I thought. I wasn't scared of him anyway, until I noticed those rips in my sheets, and that was proof that there had been a nightmare on my street. Come on, Jeff, answer it! Come on, man.
Hello?
Jeff, it's Prince, man. Jeff, wake up. Jeff, wake up.
What do you want?
Jeff, wake up, man. Listen to me, Jeff.
It's 3 o'clock
Jeff,
in the morning.
Listen,
what
Jeff,
do you
would
want?
You listen to me? Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Man.
Jeff, listen to me. Don't go to sleep,
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Jeff,
I'm going to bed.